the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Buddy, you're listening to Shazia's Radio with Mad Science. I got my friend Thomas Anderson on here and Steve, and got a big announcement. The Earth is flat. I mean, flatter than flat. I mean, it's so flat, it's flat. It's flat and stuff. Anyway, the reason why I brought that up is kind of a pretty cool deal that I like going on, like that's going on out there. There's this big giant controversy out there between the ball earthers and the flat earthers. And what I like about this whole deal is kind of sitting back and watching the evidence come forward and the people doing this debate amongst each other whether the earth is flat or whether the earth is ball. Of course, you know, I'm kind of on the side that it's a sphere, because I always like the idea of maybe one day potentially flying off into space and getting off of this crazy rock. However, what's going on out there isn't just, a bunch of insanity that some folks believe that the Earth is flat, the other believe it's round. Some people even believe it's concave. Some people believe it's convex. And personally, I don't care whether it's triangle, square, or whatever. I just think we need to get some things accomplished. But what I do like about this whole scenario is the fact that people are actually out there thinking now. All right? So now, in order for them to be able to make their side of the story sound plausible, they actually have to delve into a little bit of mathematics and a little bit of science, and they've got to be able to try to prove what they're saying and stuff like that, you know. And so Shaziz has been in the background watching them, and, you know, they come across the compass deal one day, and they're like, well, you know, compass wouldn't work on the sphere of Earth, and because, you know, the magnetic field or whatever like that kind of deal, there's supposed to be a giant, like a magnet up there at the North Pole, right? It's where the, I think they call it lodestone. Is that right, Thomas? It's magnetic?
I don't know.
Oh, anyway.
I don't get into all that nonsense.
Well,
man.
Listen, this is good, because these folks are out there, they're actually, you know, trying to think through this thing. They're actually out there doing measurements. They're actually out there taking lasers and shooting them across long distances to see, you know, whether there's a drop or a curvature and stuff like that. Now, whether it's a waste of time, whether it's a waste of time for, you know, to whatever, do all that, you know, that's neither here nor there. What I like about it is they're actually having to do some thinking, you know, and they're not just taking for somebody's word for what's going on. Anyway, it's talking about how there was a compass wouldn't work on a sphere or ball, and I pointed out how if the Earth is an electromagnetic generator, like science says, then it would work on a ball. Wouldn't matter if you was upside down at the South Pole or up at the top of the North Pole. It's going to follow the magnetic flux lines, and you can see this visibly if you have like magnet paper around just any standard magnet, or even a transformer with a magnetic field. You can see where the flux lines go through. So yeah, that compass would orient itself as long as it was level wherever it's at.
Hey, I think you could solve that little problem by holding up a disc magnet and using a compass on it, and then holding up a ball magnet and using a compass on it.
Yeah, that would probably work.
Pretty sure they'd work the same. It'd work the same no matter which shape the magnet was.
Well, Shaziz, the flat Earth argument is the biggest controversy to hit the internet since nerds realized that they could communicate across great distances. Who was better, Kirk or Picard?
Well, like I said, you know,
Star Wars or Star Trek.
As far as I'm concerned, it's a pretty big distraction in the alternative media sources of the deal. But you know what it does accomplish.
Where's the third option?
The third option? It's a hologram.
Yeah, I guess the third option has always has vanished since the old argument of blondes, brunettes, or redheads.
Well, maybe
it immediately turned into a polarized argument the second it hit Star Wars and Star Trek, and has been polarized since then. You know, all the way up to even now, we're having this argument about Republican or Democrat, and everybody's ignoring libertarians. You know?
Yeah. Well, so maybe we ought to like start up our own portion of this movement and kind of nudge in between them and say, "Y'all, y'all say it's flat. Y'all say it's round. We say it's all a hologram or some sort of an illusion." You know, it's smoke and mirrors,
it's
man.
It's a sphere, but we're not on the outside. We're on the inside.
Yeah. we're in a ball, man, and it's spinning through space really fast, man.
I would like to, at this point out that both parties are incorrect, and Terry Pratchett was actually right. The Earth is flat, but it's on the back of four elephants, flying through space on the back of the great turtle Achuin.
Well,
and that is the exact truth. I know, because I took some peyote and I went down there to chat with the guy.
I just want to see how this all plays out. I want to see where the fight.
Who, who, Who was running your sweat lodge?
I don't know, but so far the flat earthers got more points than the round earthers because they actually come across with more plausible mathematics, you know. And now, am I saying the flat earthers are right? No, the debate isn't over yet. We got to wait for the final numbers to get in. But as far as actual physical, scientific, getting out there showing, they're the only ones that's come up with anything that even looks remotely. See, they estimate that
if you ask them how everything's set up over top of it, according to them, everything's under a dome, so they can't get away from the sphere idea either. It's like, oh, the Earth's flat, but the sky is a dome.
Well,
like what? Really?
You've seen the Truman Show, right?
Well, I mean, if you ask them about the whole, what about the moon, what about this, what about that, they're trying to say all of that stuff is flat, and it looks curved because you're looking through a curved surface. Like, if the eye forms into a sphere, if you've got to have a dome to go over the planet, that tends to lead to the fact that the natural form of everything, even in their theory, is that everything is a sphere. It wants to gravitate towards being round. So why is the Earth flat? And it all comes back to they're using the flat Earth theory, all the ones that I've heard talking about it. It's important for them to believe that it's flat and to prove that it's flat because then it proves that God exists.
Well, either
like
way...
If you run the biggest... I don't know what you want to call it, hatchery or, kindergarten or whatever you want to call this place. If you're running the biggest, system of development, and the next step is you're going to have the ultimate power to the universe and everything else, meaning you're going to basically, if you're running a big room where you're vetting a bunch of people that you're going to give guns, and that's your only method of defending yourself is a gun. So if they have a gun, then you're no longer able to defend yourself against them. Why would you tell them how to trick you into letting them have a gun?
I don't know,
why,
but what?
In other words, why would you allow them to know you exist?
I don't know, but what about what about the folks that believe that the aliens have us in a terrarium? Man.
Well, I don't know about all that. I just know that it keeps boiling back down to we're the center of the universe and we're important, and the universe is not just a big dark void that doesn't care about our existence.
I'm not convinced I would say that
if I was a supreme creator of some, race like that, I wouldn't let them know I existed at all, because I want to know how they act whenever they do think that there's nothing but a dark void that doesn't care about them. Do they still care about each other? Do they still take care of each other? If they don't do that stuff, if they're being psychotic and psychopathic when they believe that there's no one watching, they're not getting out.
There's a lot of questions.
It's the ones that are going to be nice to each other. Those are the ones I'm going to let out whenever they think that it doesn't matter, that they're still nice to each other.
There's a lot of questions that come about via this crazy debate going on out there. First off, science says that the Earth is, 25,000 miles in diameter. So that means that at certain points you shouldn't be able to see certain things. And so with what the flat earther guys are saying, well, if I can see through my telescope 100 miles a ship that supposedly went over the curvature of the Earth, then maybe it's flat. Well, maybe the math is wrong, and maybe the Earth is a heck of a lot larger than what it was reported to be to begin with. Either way,
maybe it's a bit lumpy.
Yeah. You drive around in Missouri's got hills everywhere, man. It's like you couldn't tell whether it was flat or not because you have to be on the same size of hill as the one 20, 30 miles away so you can look over there and see, So, I have to look through some valleys.
I've set up Wi-Fi. Hey, I've set up high-powered Wi-Fi, and the according to the math, the curvature of the Earth kills your Wi-Fi at 15 miles. You can't really get anything more than 15 miles unless you got a really, really tall tower. And that's what we pretty much found, was that after 15 miles, things drop off.
Cool. Anyway.
So, but that could be to do with attenuation of signal as well, Tom, because you've got all of the native electrons in that distance over a 15-mile...
That wouldn't affect putting it on a taller pole to get more distance. It's like the taller the pole, the more distance we can get.
Well, I still reckon that this claim that if the Earth is flat, then God made it is kind of ridiculous, really, because if there is existence of extraterrestrials that are using us as a terrarium, then they could have made anything any shape they wanted to.
Well, it's all exciting to me because it's like there's a lot of questions going on out there, and it gets people to actually have to think about stuff because at some point...
He just said it, man. That's a third argument. Any shape they want. It's a 20-sided die.
It's a, what's that?
Partial to the dodecahedron.
There you go. Okay. That's the word I was looking for. Dodecahedron. yeah. Anyway, it don't matter. Is this what matters is that people's out there trying to do some physical science. Now, as far as the flat earther guys, they're on to the actual trying to do experiments where the ball earthers are just basically quoting from the book. So when the ball earthers get out there and do some deals to show some curvature, you know, and some math that can be tested and stuff like that, I'll give them credit for it. But it's just amusing to sit back and listen to how frustrated each one of these groups actually get when they're sitting there trying to explain their side of the story. Oh, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. Well, I keep telling them something simple like, you know, there are so many different ways that you can actually get out there and test this theory. Just get out there and do it, you know. Find out. Do the math. Exactly. Do the footwork. You ain't gonna discover the truth by sitting on the couch. If the earth is flat and there's an edge, you know, somebody got to go there, you know. Send some balloons up with cell phones. Build your own personal repeater system, you know, and track those cell phones where they go using GPS or land-based systems or whatever. You know, there's got to be a way that the average Joe can do it. You know, if it's this big conspiracy where all the governments of the world don't want anybody to know whether the Earth is flat or round, and, you know, NASA's not really in space and it's all been a fake, then somebody's got some explaining to do because there's been a lot of money spent on a lot of projects that if they never went there, then, you know, there's a problem. And...
Well, Chaziz, let's think of it this way. Perhaps you are right. Perhaps it is a hologram. And I reckon that holographic projection is coming from the icy blue depths of Uranus.
Holy smokes!
Well, isn't it the odd one out of the planets in the solar system?
Well, I don't know, man. Look, I still have questions.
Are you going to get into the ringmakers?
I still have questions for NASA because, you know, our cell phones only travel so far without repeaters, but their satellites too really good millions of miles away. And so I'd like to know, you know, are they dropping off some repeaters here or there, or do they got some really good radio technology or something, you know? Because there's a lot of crud in space, you know. There's a lack of rocks and stuff that's getting away. I know when it starts raining outside, my satellite TV don't want to work very good when it's pouring down raining outside, right? Because it kind of jacks with the signal. So, you know, there's some questions that, honest, plausible questions that need to be asked, like how are you getting through the Van Allen radiation belt with a smooth signal that can, you know, you can actually translate back into a photo. Right, that's not something that, you know, should get people in an uproar for asking. You know, that's a plausible question, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but it's a mathematical algorithm that the information is sent back from distant probes from, and they can compensate for the Van Allen belt radiation.
So, you know, what do they like? Send the signal, and it kind of fluctuates the radiation belt, and then they pick that information out of that fluctuation there or something?
Well, they kind of filter out all of the nonsense and then end up with the image that they want after they've photoshopped it and taken out all the pictures of the buildings and aliens with big signs saying Yankee go home.
Well, see, I'm not saying they can't do it because I believe they can do it. What I'm saying is the explanation that you get for why that is able to transmit, you know, clear from Pluto using a 200-watt, generator that's on board on this thing, a thermoelectric generator using plutonium and thermocouples, but yet we can't get our cell phone to call somebody in, you know, a state that's like, or a city that's maybe 100 or so miles away, you know, with this, if there ain't a tower nearby, you reek, man. And, you know, these
Well, Shaziz, I'd say that communications would work considerably better if it didn't have so many government three-letter agent filters in between you and the destination, listening to everything you've got to say, do, think, whatever.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. You know, and there's all kinds of stuff in the way. There's hills and there's metal buildings and, you know, you
well,
like Thomas said earlier.
The electronic equipment that's in every call center and every place in the planet now.
You have to have
packed into your communications and sends it off somewhere to be stored and recorded for in perpetuity. And that's no shadow of a doubt at all. They've been openly admitting that we're saving all of your video messages, even this radio show. If you lose your iPhone, the best way to find it is to put a Freedom of Information request into the NSA.
Hey, yeah.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
Can you guys
track my phone? I lost it somewhere. Do you think they would spend the time and money to do that, to find your phone? Well, they probably would, because they want to know what you're talking about, so you got to be able to spy on you. You got to have that equipment. Anyway, it's, you know, it's all interesting. When I first heard about the whole flat earth versus ball earth, controversy, you know, I come from a background of science, you know, where I just, you know, I was taught certain things in school, and that's what you know, I based all my ideas and stuff on, you know, my understanding of how the earth worked and how the solar system worked and stuff like that, you know, the space being a vacuum or whatever. And so, you know, when a plausible question comes up and I'll pose it into like one of the NASA chat rooms, and then the groupies will come unglued because they figure, well, if you're in the NASA channel, you should already know this kind of stuff. Well, I'll ask them something simple like, you know, hey, back in 1969, they had a pretty good battery system. Can anybody point me to the design? So surely the patents run out on that by now, and it's something we could, you know, replicate, because it was pretty doggone good, you know? And you got a reactor going clear to Pluto, which is so far away that sunlight barely would work for solar panels, but you're able to transmit a signal through the harshness of space and back into the earth and pick that signal up, and bam, you got a picture. You know, that's pretty doggone cool if you ask me. So I love the technology, and I love the possibilities. I love the potentials of being able to go through space and stuff, you know. But, you know, I want to, here we are in the year 2016 now, right? And we should be so much further advanced, technologically speaking, than what we are, and we're not. It's like somebody dragging their feet, you know? Put out the iPhone 6 there, whatever the next iPhone is, you know, and have one in the background that's already built, but 10 times better than the one you had before. So the technology is not coming out on the market as fast as it. I know they got to make their money back for it, you know, understand that. But, you know, in the same sense, when I was a kid and watching Jetsons, I was saying, like, by the year 2000, we're going to be flying around in those things, you know? And we're not. And you're still hollering about carbon emissions.
A simple solution for people that are into curvature or flatness, it's basically the difference between a Tuesday night and a Saturday night in the Spearmint Rhino.
Well, what's that difference?
If you don't know, I'm not going to explain it live on air.
Oh, okay. You have to tell me later then, because I didn't get it. Anyway, I don't care whether it's flat, and I don't care whether it's round. It's not going to change my views on my personal beliefs or anything like that. I just like the controversy, because it actually gets people to doing what they should have been doing all along and thinking. So with that said, I threw a couple links up in the chat room up there for a couple other, and actually Steve threw one in there. If you go over to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html, there's a couple of links that I put in to the chat room. One is one that I like to talk about. It's cavitation. It's for heating water. It's basically where you spin water up at really high RPMs and create a man-made water hammer and cause the water molecules to smash around into each other and warms it up. And the other one is from a small YouTube channel, a couple hundred subscribers out there. I actually put two links in there, two videos that he did, only because I want to spotlight all these small channels where these guys are doing research. This Tesla 101, I believe, is his Tesla Spot 101. That's his YouTube channel. And there's a lot of brilliant individuals out there doing research into this alternative technology that should be up to the front. You know, they should be seen. And so whenever I run across the smaller channels like that, I'll feature them on my YouTube channel. And, hey, you know, I'm up to a whole 6,000 and some odd subscribers now. That's pretty cool, man. It's a humbling deal there. But either way, I want those folks to be able to be seen. So if by putting them on my featured channels over there, they get more views or whatever, that'd be better than by throwing them links over in their chat rooms. Same thing. And so, you know, if there's any of you out there who know somebody who's into alternative energy research or even alternative medicines or alternatives to the crazy system that we live in, throw those links over there, and I'll help the best I can to promote those YouTube channels or networks, you know. This platform was put together, me and Steve kind of had a talk about this earlier. We didn't put this together for ego purposes. We put it together to try to do something good with. And so this platform, as far as I'm concerned, belongs to everybody out there. You know, Shazia's radio is people's radio. It's your platform. It's a microphone that you can step up to and talk anytime you got something you need to tell people and something respectful to the information that you can share. And, you know, in the alternative energy, which is my major goal, is to try to, prove once and for all, you know, free energy. You know, as much guff as I get behind the scenes about every time I say the word free energy, hey, there's people out there that are paid to troll, man. And you got to learn to get around it. But Steve also pasted a link over there. I hadn't got a chance to watch the complete video, but it's a, let me see if I can scroll up on and get that lady's name. Fran Blanche. She's got a video, and she's showing about some old trains and some old capacitors and stuff inside those trains. It's, to me, I love old technology. Yeah.
Just out of interest, I mean, I love this woman because she sits there and she breaks down exactly what all the components are and the intelligence of the engineers that originally created them. Because this is kind of, you're talking, what, maybe 1940s technology? And some of the barriers from an engineering perspective that they had, I mean, they put in safety circuits, which were kind of fuses that would blow. It would melt a piece of metal, but that metal, when it cooled, would reform. So you had a self-resetting switch. I mean, I'm kind of very briefly paraphrasing it. It goes into a lot more detail than that. But, I mean, this is the sort of stuff that I just love. It's nerd heaven.
Well, I like nerd heaven. That's where I want to go when I die, to nerd heaven. So, you know, hey, look, these things like this, old technology, new ideas, I want to start a deal. I'm probably going to try to launch it off my YouTube channel where it's an idea section, you know. You get an idea, you write it down, send a little diagram in or something like that, and we actually troubleshoot it and see if it's a plausible thing that can be built, you know, and maybe turn some ideas into reality, help each other, come up with new concepts for energy and everything else under the sun, you know. And so with that said, I want to tap into all the minds out there, all the people who got a good idea, and then they just kind of, you know, they tell a friend about it, and then bam, you know, it's gone. It's no longer around. You know, maybe somebody else on the other side of the planet come up with that same idea at the same exact time. But
Shazoo.
Yeah.
Shouldn't our governments be concentrating more on plausible capacity rather than plausible deniability?
Well, I would think so. You know, that's why I was complaining, man. You know, I sound like I'm repeating myself, but, you know, if you're going to sit out there and talk about the destruction of the world via, you know, environmental concerns or or global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week, whenever the math don't add up, then what you need to do is you need to go out there and you need to do what I'm doing and find all these people with all kinds of ideas on possible solutions in order to resolve the issue. I mean, come on, man. If the planet's boiling, then shouldn't we, like, figure out a way to cool it down? You see what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of get where you're going, but that, I don't know. That's not really good for people with big egos, is it?
No, it's not good for the guy who wants to sell oil or electricity because, you know, hey, this guy over there is talking about giving it to everybody for free. That's going to run me out of business. You know, it's a lot of people. A lot of people out there really have something to lose by free energy, you know. And there are knuckleheads out there who are, you know, putting out bogus devices and stuff like that that are hindering the process of proving free energy, right? And for those folks out there that still want to say that there's no such thing as free energy, I'm going to have to tell you to get an education and get a life, man, because when's the last time you got a bill from the sun, all right? The sun is free energy, you know. It maybe it only comes around part of the day and then, you know, whatever. But if you took in consideration that sun, whether it be a flat earth or a ball earth, is going to be somewhere in the vicinity of the earth shining down at some point during the entire day somewhere on this globe, if you built a network system that would literally track that sun 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no matter where that sun was, and did I say 365 days a year, wherever that sun was, you had a solar array that would feed into the same grid where it would power the entire world with just sunlight alone. That could be done. And whatever these guys over there ain't using the energy off of their battery bank, it'd be fed back into the grid. Everybody would have free electricity. It could be done. The same thing could apply with wind. You know, you could do the same thing, putting wind turbines in strategic positions all over. I mean, look, you got a cell phone tower every so many miles apart, and so you're able to talk further on your cell phone and be able to connect into a big old network of systems that repeat your signal over to the guy or gal you want to talk to. So what's the difference between doing that and changing the power grid to where it is a complete alternative? You ain't got no fossil fuel burning. Alright? So,
which is it? It seems very much that most governments have studied some level of philosophy. And I think one guy that used to wear robes and sandals a very long time ago said, to human is err.
Yeah.
Or rather, to be human is to err. And I think most of them stand there and say,
Well, what I think you meant to say was error.
No, to be human is to err.
Yeah.
Most of them, when you ask them about free energy, they stand there and say, Seems very much like it, doesn't it?
All right, well, that same one that's standing around there going, like that is the same one out there saying, you know, global warming, got a sign with global warming on there. And his girlfriend got one that says, save the trees. They got a paper and a wooden sign over there that says, save the trees. And the other one talking about reduce your carbon footprint and stuff like that, save the planet and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's like they said, we've found a way of setting up a mechanism where we can charge you for breathing, so global warming, climate change,
climate disruption.
But it does seem
maybe we could switch the language again to be more specific instead of free energy versus, say, oil energy. Or whatever, you know, their energy is that they're basically trying to say, no, you need that. There is no free energy. You have to get your energy from us. Turn it to what it really is, which is paid for energy that someone else makes versus energy you can make yourself.
Well,
as an Irish farmer said when they asked him to pay for water from his own private well, he said, I'll give you some money when God sends me a bill, because as far as I'm concerned, it comes from him.
Well, that's
I would say it's a matter of energy where you're dependent or energy where you're independent.
Yeah.
Are you independent because of the energy that you're using,
because you can get it yourself from wherever the source is, or are you paying somebody else to get it for you and bring it to you?
Now that's better.
Do you have pots and pans at home that you cook your own food that you grew in your own garden, or are you eating TV dinners that you bought at the store and just had to pop in the microwave?
The population of England is somewhere around about 60 million, and they live on 6% of the actual surface of the island.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what we're saying is, if those 60 million people had sufficient land to be able to supply themselves with nutrients to sustain themselves healthily, then you'd need more than 6% of the country's surface to do it on.
Well,
and what have we got? We've got the United Nations running around all over the shop saying, well, we need to centralize everything so we can have distributed resources. Effectively what they're saying is, we don't necessarily want distributed resources, we want managed resources to put quangos in to tell you how much you're not allowed to use.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are some places in this world that are so dad blasted uninhabitable because either they're A, too freaking hot, or they're too doggone cold, or too doggone windy, or whatever. And those places right there would be a perfect place to put alternative energy grids and systems, because nobody wants to live there anyway. If it's hotter than heck out there in the desert, you got one heck of a opportunity to build a massive thermocouple system. I mean, heck, if NASA can do it, why can't you do it? You know? Heat rises. You can force that hot air up into turbines.
You look at the UK at the minute, you've got all these people living in houses, in villages and towns, cities even, that have been there for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and they keep flooding.
Yeah.
And the question is why do you keep living there? If it keeps flooding, and it keeps destroying people's livelihoods and every possession that they've collected throughout their entire life, why not go somewhere where it doesn't flood?
Well, my favorite one, I think it's Venice. Where they got the gondolas that they float around through the streets, or their streets are water.
Yeah,
and the sink or something like that.
Yeah, if you look underneath the buildings that they got, there were other buildings that were there before the water got as high as it did, and so there's literally flooded basements all over that place, and they paddled to and fro where they want to go.
Buildings, if they were able to just build on top of them like that.
Yeah.
They're actually floating. Amsterdam itself is a city built on a swamp, and the whole thing is on floating pontoons.
Well, either way, that just proved positive. Where there's a will, there's definitely a way. And I get frustrated because you got one hand, you got the government telling you how terrible things are in the world, and you got people out there protesting the fuel industries and the coal industries and the energy companies and stuff like that, when in reality we got everything we need to give them exactly what they want. They just don't do it. I mean, you're not going to go over and tell the electric company that they need to start giving you away free electricity, and they need to produce it via solar panels or whatever, because they're not going to do it. No company's going to give away their business for free. It wouldn't be a business otherwise. It'd be a charity.
In fact, if you try to break free of it, they're going to do everything they can to fight you breaking free.
Yeah. And so the only option you got, since you outnumber all of those, don't ask for permission, just build it. Just start building your own grid. If it takes going down to the local hardware store and buying you some electrical wire buried underground over to your doggone neighbor's house and share the electricity with your neighbor and vice versa, and just start it that way.
Well, have you seen this new film that Kevin Costner's trying to release called Field of Nightmares? Well, he builds a baseball field in his cornfield, and the EPA turn up with a SWAT team because he didn't get planning permission.
That's another thing right there, man. I'm talking about burying
it. They will come and shut it down.
Yeah. I'm talking about...
and arrest you for it.
Building an electrical system, burying some cable underground to your neighbor's house. And in a lot of places, that's illegal as all get out. You can't do that, You know, power company can do that because they got all the permits and permission, and they pay the right people the right money in the right pocket. You know, and so you know they got it squared away. But the average Joe,
they're right behind.
But I'm saying, in the dead of night when ain't nobody looking, get out there with your shovel, dig a trench, bury that sucker over there down to your neighbor's house, and share some electricity that you generate on your side over there to them, and vice versa. You know. That's it.
Make them bury their half of the line. That way, you know they're complicit, and
yeah.
they can't call a law on you.
Yeah.
If they get into an argument with you.
So they're like partners in crime.
Yes, that's it. In cahoots.
Yeah, I like
in
that.
Cahoots.
So you know, as far as places where they tell you you can't have solar panels because they look bulky, you know. However, they do allow you to have swimming pools. Then put the solar panel in the bottom of your swimming pool. You'll keep the solar panel cooler, and you'll actually make it more efficient. So, you know, there you go. The water's refracting the sunlight. You can't see it from the outside, and you're just using that to generate whatever battery system you want to charge up and run your inverters off of that. Well, there's a wheel, there's a way.
In fairness, I did try to start a counter campaign to put it into perspective when people were saying that solar panels looked ugly. I said, if that was the case, why doesn't Rosie O'Donnell wear a bag over it when she gives public speeches?
Yeah, does my property value go down when she comes on my TV?
I don't know, but to be perfectly honest, let's be honest about what isn't an eyesore and what isn't.
Well, you know, they get used to...
In my opinion, your property value went down whenever you mentioned you had a TV.
I think Thomas mentioned one time that way back, I don't think it was you, that mentioned one time way back about how some of these houses were designed way back in the day where they would have like a really long deal over one side and the other side would be kind of maybe flattened off so that because the sun was coming around a certain direction during the summertime in a certain direction, so they had to planned out pretty good so that they keep the house warm in the winter, warmer in the winter and cooler in the summer. So there's a possibility right there, you know, those little deals that you put over your doggone windows to, you know, block out some of the sunlight, sunshades or whatever you want to call them. Can't remember what the actual word for it is. But
geometric alignment.
Yeah, well, if you had those sitting over your window, it's like part of your house, looks good on there. Solar panels don't look bad if you look at them, you know, but if they're sitting right out in the middle of the yard or something, somebody could complain about them.
Oh, the thing that I was thinking would be good for places where it gets extremely cold in the winter and hot in the summer, since the sun's shining year-round, is to put these reflective blind-like struts that go over the surface of all the areas that the sun can hit. And when you rotate them, you paint the building basically black and then put these reflective mirror blinds so you can actually direct the sun onto the building during the winter by bouncing it off those reflectors and into the building, or expose it to the sun. And then during the summer, whenever it's really hot, you turn them closed and reflect all the sunlight away. And they're raised off the surface and made of aluminum, so whatever heat they generate is quickly dissipated back into the atmosphere, which I got the idea from looking at how trees shade the ground, you know.
Yeah.
They have leaves and they're blocking the sun, but their leaves are all disconnected, so the air can flow in between them and carry the heat that they do generate from the sun bouncing off them directly into the atmosphere instead of letting it build up closer to the ground and then end up transmitting it to the ground. Well, look at the way trees grow their branches as well. I mean, there was a young lad that did a lot of investigation into it and found that the spiral that branches grow on a tree is very similar to the spiral that you see in the galactic arm. And something that Aborigines have been drawing on cave walls for the best part of their knowledge, 35,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's something to be said for that as well. And we work of nature. The house I bought in Ireland, after about 5 o'clock in the evening, you had no sun in the garden, in the back garden. So you couldn't sit outside in the back garden and enjoy the evening, because it got too cold. And it's kind of the planners that build these housing estates don't take into consideration
your actual quality of life once you're living in them.
Right.
You know, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, or whichever one, I can't remember, I never remember that. But when you've a house on the wrong alignment, you get all of the sun in the front of your house in the morning when you don't really want it, and it's kind of cold and gloomy.
It depends on your culture. See, they did the same thing that you're talking about, that you want them to do for you, to the native culture here, and we were using the sun to wake up.
Yeah.
Like, now we don't know when it's time to wake up, because the sun's not shining in our eyes to wake us up in the morning.
Well, they put the master bedroom at the rear of the house.
Right.
It just shows that this whole earth versus human factor is not taken into consideration. I mean, I don't mean feng shui or anything like that, that is more in Asian culture, but the whole design of buildings, you know, they design a building, but they do it in isolation. They don't take into consideration the surrounding environment.
Because right, if they did, how it's going to impact it.
They couldn't build houses in horseshoes, because half those houses wouldn't be in alignment with Earth's potential energies, if you like. And of course, if they were in straight rows, well, you know, that's kind of boring and tedious, and nobody gets awards for that.
It's a lot harder to get lost, though, if you build your cities in grids and just name everything alphabetically and numerically.
Well, like the Romans.
No, numbers running east and west, and letters running north and south, and you name them after something that is the ones that the streets that are basically going from the east side of the town are all named after things that are east of town, headed back around the globe, and west of town you name them after things that are west of you, headed in the other direction from the globe.
The housing estate I grew up on in England was named after the counties of the country.
Hmm. Well, as I say, in Tulsa, everything is new. Everything that runs north and south, if it's east of the meridian of town, of what you would consider your main street, it's named after a city that's east of Tulsa. And if it's west of that meridian, then it's named after a town that's west of Tulsa. And then everything else is numeric.
I don't know, there's something urgently wrong with the whole planning thing.
Another issue is that if we switch to metric, every 10 blocks, meaning, you know, 1 through 10, street 1 through 10, is from street 1 to street 10 is a mile. So now what's it going to be?
I'm not even talking about metric versus imperial. I'm talking about the fact
and design. Oh yeah, I know, but I'm just saying that the way they have it designed now, 10 blocks equal a mile. So how many blocks would equal a kilometer? If you build it according to the metric system, then every, you know, it'd be like, I don't know, maybe every 5 blocks is a kilometer exactly. But now it's going to be, you know, disjointed, because every 10 blocks is going to be 2.2. on average, kilometers.
Well, this 1 mile is 1.6 kilometers.
1 mile is 1 mile is what?
1.6 kilometers, roughly.
Is it? I thought it was 2.2 kilometers. Now I'm thinking, maybe I'm thinking of weight. 2.2.
Yeah, 2.2 pounds.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So yeah, see, it's. Everything is all kind of disjointed then whenever you switch between the two. So are you going to go to and through and rip all the roads up and rebuild it all? Because humans don't tend to do that. They tear everything up and then they just leave it torn up.
I don't think you really need to rip the streets up to change to a metric system, Tom. That would be a bit like when I used to sell gas to electricity customers. And they said, are you going to dig up my house? And I said, yes, love. That existing gas pipe that... you have going into your house is not regulation, so we're going to have to tear it all out and replace it.
All right, well, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in the chat room over there for a photo. I posted a link inside the Skype for you guys to take a peek at the Flat Earth and the NASA cards right there. You just have to check them out. Pretty cool.
Never a straight answer, eh?
Nope. Well, you know, they got
what is this thing called, a straight answer?
Well, it's sort of like you don't beat around the bush whenever somebody asks you a simple question like, you know, what kind of batteries they used back in the day. Oh, what are you, stupid or something? You know, I'm like, what?
No, if you're in the military, you burn it down.
No, you dig a big pit and bury it, and then put armed guards around it for the next millennia. So if anybody comes within spitting distance of something that's 200 feet below the ground, you just shoot them.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you know, what this all boils down to is we got everything we need, the tools and the technology to literally build things that will last and to build things that will function properly, and we could do it in harmony with nature, but we don't do it as the controversy goes on. I'm tired of the controversy. Just like the whole flat earth versus ball earth guys. I mean, okay, if you guys got this dispute, then get your tape measures and your levels out, and get out there and do some hardcore mathematical scientific experiments. Prove your side. Get it over with. Shut up and let's move on. You see what I mean?
Shut your face.
Yeah.
let me bring in a little piece of mad science from the financial sector that I've come across recently. It's called guaranteed income. Now, I think it was the Finnish government are talking about implementing a system of guaranteed income into their population, where you get money whether you work or not.
Cool.
Now, the point they're trying to make is the government are just basically caretakers of the nation's resources.
Yeah, but
that's what they're supposed to be. And the whole concept of guaranteed income is it will bring upon a renaissance where people don't have to struggle. I mean, I asked somebody, what is the purpose of inheritance tax? And somebody said to me, oh, well, it's to stop the formation of dynastic families. And I said, what, like the Queen?
Yeah, for those...
it's okay for them, but it's not okay for anybody else to form a dynastic family of unlimited wealth, power, authority, influence. But every generation now has to struggle because half of what their parents have managed to save, scrape, earn, or whatever, goes directly to the government upon their death. So what you're doing is you're instituting a form of austerity for every single generation that comes along, because your family's wealth is cut in half every time the matriarch and patriarch of that family dies.
Huh. For those of you out there, for those of you rednecks out there, Renaissance is Renaissance.
Well, yeah, I do speak English, my friend. Unfortunately.
Yeah, you say creek, I say crick, or I don't say crick. And my mother and father-in-law down there, they have this habit of calling a creek a crick, and it drives me nuts.
Well, we have aluminium as well, my friend.
Yeah.
A proper metal.
Basin, sink, whatever.
Anyway, tomato, whatever.
Yeah.
Press. Getting back to this whole principle of guaranteed income. Now, you can look at it as the government is going to find out what resources it has at its disposals and then distribute what they consider to be the minimum standard of the cost of living to every individual, regardless of their circumstances. Now, what that could also be seen as is complete government dominance.
Yeah, it's kind of like the soup Nazi, man. If you asked a question from NASA, because NASA's a government agency, it'd be like, no soup for you!
But I think in a place like, Finland, it could probably work, but in other countries then there would always be strings attached to it that you'd have to conform to this rule. I mean, look at it, they're already talking about, you know, you'll be restricted from flying or traveling or even have your passport recovered by the state if you don't pay your taxes, which are supposedly voluntary anyway.
Yeah, it's amazing how they say voluntary, then they'll send somebody over to kick your door in.
Yeah, it's like saying walk softly and carry a big stick. Well, unfortunately, the IRS has seemed to have forgotten the part about walking softly, They just went straight to the stick in every circumstance. Like the guy that ran a gas station there where they sent a SWAT team to collect 1 cent in unpaid taxes.
Man, that's brutal.
Yeah. That's what he said. He said, well, I've got kind of a couple hundred dollars in the till. We can't be that much. But that 1 cent, because of fines, penalties, fees, and administration costs, went into the thousands. And he said, how could 1 cent end up in thousands and thousands and thousands? Don't look it up, people.
That's the insanity of the system, man. I mean, and I'm sitting out here hollering about mad science and free energy because I'm like, you know, you want it. You say you want it anyway. You say you want to save the planet. But as far as I'm concerned, actions speak louder than words. Yeah, get up off the couch and do it. It's as simple as that. You know, you got to weed through all the crackpots out there and do real research and share real information with each other. And when you find somebody that's giving you bogus information, just walk away from them. Don't waste your time with it. You know, there's folks out there trying to sell plans to alternative energy devices, and I've said it a million times, I'm going to put every idea I got out there on the table, and if you take off with that idea and you go out and patent it and you make $1 million, I don't care. As long as that idea it still has life in it. It's still being used, because as many ideas as run through my head, I can imagine that there's some people out there that don't get heard, that there are tons and tons more ideas that just go by the wayside. They get forgotten, you know. And the creativity on a combined mass of people up there in this world, if there's 8 billion people on this planet, then there's a lot of creativity out there, and there's a lot of solutions to just about everything you can ask, every question that you can ask for, every problem under the sun. Somebody out there got the idea for a solution, and you won't know whether or not that idea is plausible until you test it.
We can look at it this two ways. There's a story about a professor that had come up with a theory, and he based his entire academic career on it for the best part of 30 years. And he's in the lecture hall one day, and he's kind of doing his spiel that he's been doing for the last 20 odd years, and he perfected it and everybody loved it. And some young kid put his hand up, and he called him up to the stage, and he went up to the blackboard, and in about 15 seconds flat, he basically trashed the theory and said, no, that's completely wrong, it's actually like this. And the professor burst into tears, and people thought he was really angry, and he said, no, the whole purpose of what I've been doing for the last 30 years is to find somebody smart enough to find me wrong. That's how we move forwards. But what it seems is somebody comes up with an idea, and anybody that even hints that they've got a different answer is shouted down and buried and kind of put into a position of ignominy where nobody will take them seriously. And what do we want? Do we want to move forwards, or do we want to be stuck in a status quo where, you know, the science is sorted and polar bears drown?
Well, it's a simple case is, I don't want to be right, I want to get it done. Alright? If somebody else has the answer, then let's get it done. You know, if I'm wrong, what my science and my theories are, if they're not right, show me the right one, because the only way we're going to move forward is, like you said, man, is to drop the egos, drop all the craziness, and just get it done. There's so many people out there. Everyone is just one piece of a massive puzzle. You put those pieces of the puzzle together, you got the big picture, you know. One man don't build a house by himself unless he's a multi-talented genius with, you know, extraordinary super strength or whatever. You got to have a plumber, you got to have an electrician, you got to have a painter, somebody who does drywall, somebody who does roofing, framers, and all that kind of stuff. And there's multiple tools involved in this whole deal, so somebody's got to build the tools.
Well, in fairness, Shaziz, there was a guy called Dick Pronicker who went up to Alaska in 1969 and built himself a log cabin with only the tools that he carried on his back.
Well,
believe me, he didn't have a 47-inch plasma TV, and he certainly didn't have flushing toilets.
But he made the best out of a bad situation.
Well, I think he decided that he'd just had enough of the rat race and quite liked the idea of isolation from humanity. But we're not all going to have that situation available to us.
Well, I would like to live the simple life, but I have this problem that I'm addicted to technology. I love to see how things work, and I want to be able to turn the lights on, you know. I want to be able to flush the toilet, you know, whatever. But don't mean I can't, at that same time, come up with ideas to improve on everything that I got. You see what I'm saying? And then pass that on to somebody else who improves that even better. Before it's all said and done, we're living in a world like the one we see on TV, you know? I like the whole Star Trek The Next Generation, where they're flying through space in this massive, spaceship and got all the cool tools and toys and stuff on there. The replicators and the doggone, beam me up, Scotty kind of things, you know? And the holodeck, where they can go in there and, you know, it's like entertainment. It's like TV that you get inside of, and you just kind of, you live out the movie kind of deal. I think all that stuff is possible.
Instead of living vicariously through the achievements of others, be the wrestlers, golfers, football players, you go into a holographic environment and live your own fantasy.
Yeah, you be the football hero for a change. What's wrong with that? I mean, heck, if you're gonna want to dream
it, that requires getting off one's butt.
Well, I know that would probably take away from a whole lot of obesity, and I know a lot of people like to be obese. So, hey, you know, to each his own. But if you want to be a couch potato, then you will be a couch potato.
I haven't met anybody that actually enjoys. Well, maybe one or two people actually enjoy being fat. Most of them just enjoy the things that get you fat. That's all.
Most people don't realize what's in what gets you fat, and they don't realize that there's a certain level of addiction to those elements as well.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I've got one of those body types that won't let me get fat, and I hear nothing but disdain over the fact that they can't have that same physiology, because then, you know, they could do all the stuff they want to do without getting fat.
Well, heck, man, look at me, man.
They don't understand it comes with migraines and all kinds of problems like that, because, you know.
I got a doggone metabolism like a chihuahua. Probably even look like one, too. But,
we've seen you.
I can eat a horse and not gain any weight, you know. It's crazy, but
eating a horse probably be healthier than eating some of the stuff these people are eating. So.
Well, here we live in a modern day world. You think that somebody out there, and somebody probably has, come up with the perfect meal. I mean, literally, you could design the perfect meal, would give you the perfect amount of calories, the perfect amount of taste, everything, and you could eat healthy the rest of your life just by eating this particular meal. And they could even mix it up a little bit, you know. So you ain't eating the same thing all the time. But the technology's there. The mathematics is there to do the calculations. There's brilliant cooks and chefs and people out there. I mean, heck, Steve could help them out with that portion of it to make it taste good and look good. You know? He's talking about things.
There's a Japanese guy that spent years, if not decades, creating a curry that actually tastes like poo.
Why would he want to do that?
I don't know, but he's Japanese, so we'll probably leave it with that. I couldn't believe it.
Honestly, if you look on YouTube, there's actually a chemistry channel out there that gives you all the steps for making compounds that smell like vomit and smell like rotten bodies.
Yuck!
Apparently, it's like the chemistry of making the compound, the chemical that actually creates that smell.
Do you know that down...
You remove that chemical and the body stops stinking.
They got this candy store down there at the mall downtown Kansas City, the plaza.
And everything this, jelly beans?
Yeah, that thing's nasty, man. They got all kinds of weird looking... they got some that taste like grass or some that taste like... You know, I don't even want to talk about it. It's disgusting. But, you know, when...
What type of grass? Well, that way you can have jelly bean roulette.
Yeah, but, dude, man, why would you want to put something that tastes like that in your mouth? Yuck.
it's jelly bean Russian roulette. They've actually got a chocolate Russian roulette. It's a bunch of chocolate bullets that every, like, 10th one or something is full of, like, this incredibly hot... pepper stuff in it. So, you know, when you eat it, because it's chocolate, it's like, this is pretty good. And then your ears catch on fire and your hair catches on fire. And
that just kind of shows the mentality of the modern people because, man, I mean, first off, who would want to buy, you know, nasty flavored candy or is going to burn your mouth off chewing gum, set fire to your hair? Who would want to do that?
Bored people.
Well,
it sounds like Monty Python's Crunchy Frog Surprise.
My mom used to tell me, you know, whenever I tell her I was bored, she says, I got plenty of chores for you to do. And so I would go outside and I would find things to amuse myself. I mean, when we didn't have like cap guns and stuff like that to play, westerns or Dargon Army Men or something like that, we went out and pulled sticks up out of the ground and used them for spears and chased each other around the yard. But
you never used wire coat hangers and rubber bands to make yourself a slingshot and shoot each other.
Well, we used wood and cut out some doggone slingshots. You know, scrap wood out of the dump. Man, you'd be surprised how creative we came up with. But the fact of the matter is, all these people out there that are so doggone bored, I don't know how you can get bored in today's day and age, and that's why pretty much everybody's face is glued to either a video game, a TV, or a cell phone. And they're out there like a Steve said, mentioned earlier, living vicariously through the fake world of the internet or whatever, you know, you could build your own person out there and have your own person out there interacting with other persons. They got virtual worlds just like that. Now, I don't begrudge people to go do their video games and stuff like that, you know, and socially network, but I have seen on YouTube a bunch of videos where you got little teenage kids sitting around there foul-mouthing each other and DDoSing each other, trying to boot each other offline. And if you got the talent enough to do all that kind of stuff and programming, then why aren't you out there writing a computer program that's going to do something positive as opposed to negative? You see what I mean?
Maybe
a video game that teaches somebody something.
I was looking at trying to create something that would make money recently. And after years of investigation, I found that if you can find the most useless thing possible that benefits humanity in no way whatsoever, and probably actually leads to detriment in their quality of life, then you'll make a lot of money from it.
Well, heck yeah, man. Look at the pogo stick. That's a dangerous thing. You ever seen
it? Oh, no. I'm talking about things far worse than that. I mean, look at Angry Birds. Even the guy that designed it took it offline, because he said it was destroying his life too. But I mean, what are the major things that, I mean, Facebook, what a joke. I mean, I actually travel around the country that I'm currently living in, and on the buses, on the trains, even walking down the street, people are glued to these little electronic devices. And you know, the amount of times I've had to say to people, you know, if you were actually watching where you were going instead of being glued to your electronic device, you just wouldn't have knocked all my shopping on the floor.
Yeah, probably ran face first into that sign there or whatever.
But now I tend to shoulder them into the oncoming park from buses. And they kind of realise where they are then.
Well, the whole thing about it is, There's another piece of the drama to throw in there. You know, if everybody is instead of going over visiting somebody, you know, in person, instead of, I don't need to go over and visit my aunt or my grandma, I can just talk to them on Facebook, you know, then we shouldn't be using up as much fuel as we used to, because there ain't too many people leaving their house or glued to the doggone Facebook. You see what I'm saying? So maybe that's why the doggone gas prices are coming down, because ain't nobody buying gas.
Mate, I was invited around to a Chinese guy's house the other night. And when I went over, I took a nice chocolate cake that I baked specially to bring with me. And he said, oh, where'd you buy it? You know, this is really nice. Where'd you buy it? You know, I have to go and shop there. And I said, next door. He said, what do you mean next door? I said, I made it. And he said, you baked it yourself. I said, yes, we have this capacity. You know, humanity has the ability to be creative. Do you think that the people that work in the shop are geniuses? No offense to them, I'm sure they're very skilled, but at the same point, you know, in my culture, if you go and visit somebody, you bring something with you. If you really can't cook, you go and buy it, but if you can, you do.
Yeah.
But it was just shocked that somebody would actually bake something themselves, which would take time, effort, and intellect, rather than ordering it online through his iPhone.
Well, it's kind of like those folks out there that they don't know where their meat comes from or their vegetables. They just know you can go to the grocery store and it comes in a nifty little package. You know, never mind the fact that somewhere out there in the world there's a farmer or somebody, you know, planting and cultivating and all that kind of stuff and finally shipping it off to market. And by the time they get it, they're paying a heck of a lot more than they would have paid if they just went over to the farmer and knocked on his door and says, hey, you mind if I buy a bushel of your corn there? You know, buy it directly from the farmer, save some money. You know, the folks that's figured that out are the folks that are out there making a heck of a lot of money because they're going out there buying it from somebody for a low price by the bushel, and then they're taking around and selling it at the markets to other people for a higher price, who then in turn have companies that come around and buy that from them, who take it off to the stores and sell it for even a higher price. By the time you get it, it's at the very least a 300% markup.
Well, Shaziz, the guy was saying you always know who's going to come to a party because they usually order stuff online and it'll get delivered before they arrive.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go and visit somebody, they give you a address. So you go online through your iPhone and order cakes or maybe some chicken wings or something like that. And that gets delivered before you even arrive. And he said he's not used to people actually bringing things they made themselves because people don't do that anymore.
Well,
too busy.
For convenience wise, it does sound kind of cool, but for social wise, you know, it is better you bring something that you made yourself to, you know, not only open up a conversation, a dialogue with somebody, but show them that there's a possibility they can do the same thing. Maybe they can cook too, you know, maybe they got something, mixed drink that they can make that they're going to make for you, share, whatever, you know. But that, once again, I'm going to bring this back to the whole flat earth debate going on out there. As crazy as that sounds, I'm enjoying every minute of it because as I'm listening to these folks out there debating, one guy's got to top the other guy. So in order for them to top the other guy, they actually have to get off the couch and do some research, man. They got to get out there and they got to do some plausible science because on the ball earth side, they're losing their shorts because on the flat earth side, they're getting out there with tape measures and cameras and they're at least showing that you can see things further away than the mathematics show. So that means that either the mathematics are wrong or the earth is flat. So,
well, actually, Shaziz, the truth is the majority of people, not all of them, but a large number of the people on either side of the debate haven't even got any shorts on. They're sitting on their couches having half-assed opinions on an iPad.
Well, that's probably kind of disturbing and probably true at the same time.
Why do you think they created avatars? Because if you're a 300-pound naked man, you know, with lipstick on, eating, you know, cookie dough,
not going to get a whole lot of friends.
No.
No, doggone it, had a train of thought and just lost it.
On one side you've got some guy saying I'm a male model who can barely get out of his own chair. On the other side you've got another guy pretending to be a woman that says he's a ballerina that can't get out of his chair either. And neither of them care because they're never going to meet each other because they never leave their own apartment.
I remember my train of thought there. Is that, another one of the big giant conspiracies why they put things like chlorine and fluoride in people's water to make them want to be fat and wear lipstick and, you know, essentially
crap? It does calcify the pineal gland. That is one of the side effects of, well, direct effects of fluoride. There's no side effect to it. It calcifies the gland in your brain that regulates mood.
Well, wasn't you the one that told me about where the doggone your brain was made up of
cholesterol?
cholesterol, yeah. And they get cholesterol medicine to regulate their cholesterol, which it essentially would be, you know, if correct me if I'm wrong, melting away their brain.
What they're claiming is high levels of cholesterol is really dangerous for the human body, so they give you these pills that reduce the level of cholesterol. Well, unfortunately, 90% of your brain is cholesterol.
And so therefore you don't have 90% of your brain. Every time you take a pill away, it takes away a percentage.
Well, they came out in a national newspaper recently. I'm sure if people go and look it up, they'll find it. That statins actually cause health issues. They're directly resulting in causing forms of brain damage.
Well, you can always trust your government, man. You can trust the doctors. You can trust the drug industry. You can trust the power company. You can always trust them, man.
With the amount of toxins in the food now, people aren't even smart enough to realize that there's two B's in government. No offense to the general population, but I'm trying to make a point.
Yeah, well, the point's well taken. I mean, it's just, it's insanity as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, it drives me crazy. It literally drives me crazy. I love watching alternative energy research. I love watching the little guy down there on the small channels do research, actual physical experiments, and posting videos on YouTube. But it really bothers me when I look and I see that video only has a couple hundred views at the most, you know. And some of them even less than that. And so when I see that, I'm going to post it on my deal, so hopefully that somebody else will take a look at it, you know. You know, Zero Fossil Fuel out there, he did a replication of the Keshi plasma reactor, right? And he has gone through meticulously, step by step, exactly the way that it was explained. And he's actually built a replication of this system. It don't work. And it hasn't worked yet. I mean, he did it exactly like it was supposed to be done. Took all the measurements step by step. And even after critics came in and said, you didn't do this step right, he went back and he's in the process of re-replicating that process to do it better than it did before. And he'll come up with his findings. If he finds out when it's all said and done that the doggone thing works, he'll post it just like he would if it didn't work. But there's guys out there who are willing to go the mile, extra mile, to vet the technology to prove or disprove it. You know, and he's not doing it for hateful reasons. He's doing it because there are actually people out there buying into this technology and making this man rich, who is basically selling snake oil to the world.
Yeah, but Shaziz, was there any direct assistance available from the Keshi Foundation? So you built one of the devices and it didn't work. Can you approach them and say, can you give us a bit of help, lads?
Oh, yeah, they got networks all over the place.
Not talking about networks, Shaziz. It's like if you buy something from a shop and it doesn't work, you take it back to the shop and you say, fix it.
Oh, no.
So you don't worry about all the other people that don't really know what they're doing either.
In the fine print, when you buy one of those deals, it has instructions on how to hook it up and what kind of loads to put on it and how long the time frame it takes for this thing to actually nano coat your entire wiring system of your house until one point you can go down to the farthest one away from it and you can look at the wiring, peel back the wiring in the socket, and you'll see that your wiring is black from being nano coated. Well, in the fine print, it pretty much states that, you know, if anything goes wrong, you must not have followed the directions. You're stupid. No soup for you.
Well, should anybody that's going to go out there and put plans on the internet and won't take responsibility or even offer the most rudimentary assistance in troubleshooting it, to my mind, is kind of a bit of a joker, really.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out why it is all these supposedly brilliant individuals who out there who actually fell for the technology are actually still propping it up, because they still do the same knowledge seeker meetings and so on and so forth, and they'll sit there and talk about how people's trolling them and there's paid disinformants and all that kind of stuff, when in reality, if you sit through, like I have, hours and hours and hours and hours and days of this guy's babbling and scribbling on a whiteboard, telling people, if you understand, you know, but never coming across with any kind of hardcore in your face, I'm showing you this device, this is how it works, we've taken this thing apart, these are the measurements on the deal, this is exactly what's going on, this is real technology stuff, and if they have the technology and they're giving it away to the world for free, minus the 900 euros that you're going to buy, you know, three units for, so they can give two to somebody who's poor on the other side. If they got the technology and they're giving it away to the world, they want everybody to replicate this technology, they should put a working device on the table, show it, do the measurements, and not something that's like a battery bank that you can run a couple drills off of. Heck, I can do that with a car battery and a dang inverter, you know?
I've had a Chinese lady come to me three times now telling her how to make double blueberry chocolate muffins. And they're kind of simple, really. But on the third time, I said, okay, well, I've shown you how to make these three times now. It'd be the fourth time. And I asked her to show me how she's making them. And it wasn't the method that I showed her, because I even wrote it down and made a little video for her of me making them. And I said, why do you do something that I didn't show you how to do? And she said, oh, because my friend said so.
And I said, go learn from your friend then, leave me alone.
I said, so basically you come back to me for the fourth time now to get me to show you again how to make them when you're not actually listening to what I told you and you're doing something that a third party who doesn't actually know what they're doing told you to do instead.
Well, you think that's what Keshi's doing? Is like, you know, he showed everybody, if they can't figure it out, that's their problem?
No, I think what's happening is a lot of people are kind of asking each other what to do instead of asking Keshi.
Yeah, well, whenever they ask him a tough question, he goes around the doggone bush to give a non-answer.
I mean, my attitude is, okay, so I'm thick, I'm stupid, but you still have my money.
Yeah.
Give me some answers. And if every single member of the community stood up and said, okay, we've built this to the best of our ability and it doesn't work, how about you start putting straight our errors because you still have our money?
Well, if anybody's interested in a honest replication of the Keshi generator, Magrav generators, I like the one guy who said his cat's got to go use the Magrav. He cracked me up.
I saw a YouTube video of a cat using a toilet and flushing afterwards. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, they actually had a kit that would teach your cat how to do that. But anybody who really seriously wants to look into a honest deal where it's an honest replication, go over to Zero Fossil Fuel. Basically, just jump over to shazizradio.com/superchat.html and right underneath the two chat rooms, the Awake Radio chat room and the Shaziz Radio chat room, you will see two Zero Fossil Fuel links, one to a YouTube channel and one to Zero Fossil Fuel's website, wherein he has an IRC chat over there you can join up to and you can talk to him real time. And so it's a virtual lab situation that I really like. And he will answer your questions. He's a really nice guy, you know, and he does really good work. So he's not trying to scam anybody. He's not trying to sell you some sort of replication of a Keshi device. He's just trying to test it and vet the technology. And when it doesn't work, he's moving on to his next project. But the links are there.
I would like to point out that, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that Keshi's devices do work or don't work, but there seems to be a lot of acceptance of things that don't work. People work hard for the money they get. They get taxed through their eyeballs. And to go off and give people that hard-earned revenue in an attempt to try and give your own family some sort of stability, to not go back to people and hold them to account seems to be insane to me. And it seems that a lot of people are getting away with a lot of stuff because nobody will just stand up and say, no, this isn't acceptable.
Yeah, that's true. And it makes the whole research like I'm doing that much harder, because You know, whenever I tell everybody, I'm not going to ask you for a doggone cent. If anybody asks you for money, it ain't me. You know, that's like when my Skype got hacked and the guy's trying to get everybody to buy them some sort of iPhone cards or whatever like that. If anybody ever, if you ever see my name pop up there and I'm asking you for money, you know it ain't me. So don't click on it.
Yeah, because you know I haven't got any.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't ask you anyway. But either way, when I say free energy, I mean it. And so when I'm talking about my version of the plasma technology, I'm talking about, like, you look at a plasma ball, how a plasma globe works, and you can see a visible something going on there. You can see how you put your finger up next to it, and a little arcs will follow your finger around the plasma globe and stuff like that. So you can see something is actually occurring there. If you can see visible light in that gas, then you know you also have heat. So the type of plasma that I'm talking about is basically energizing any of the noble gases into the plasma state, where you've actually got, you know, some physical reaction occurring right there before your very eyes that you can not only see but test. And so with that said, using that technology that's right there in front of your face and being able to take the energy away from a generator head in a form to change that energy to a completely different form, like in the fourth state of matter being plasma, then take that energy off and change it back into a form that can be used to run whatever appliances you want to run. What this does is, number one, it doesn't invoke Lenz's law because it's not sending energy back into the same generator you're trying to draw energy off of. It's taking that energy off of that generator, moving it into a completely different state of matter, and then transferring it on down the line via heat or light or voltage or whatever. From that point on, then you can use tricks like capacitors and battery banks to start taking that energy back into a form that you can actually run an inverter off of. And so with that said, I'm not trying to sell you any designs. I'm trying to put an idea on the table that if you take and run with this idea, you could beat me to the punch. You could finally get this doggone thing out there into the world faster than I can. If you have access to milling equipment or even 3D printing equipment or glass blowers or any kind of people who can wind transformers or coils or whatever like that, you know, you could get it done quicker than I can. Now, what I do with my technology is I use a lot of repurposed stuff. I'll go out and find equipment that does certain things, like air purifiers out there. They have ion generators in there. It's a high voltage, and that high voltage can actually energize gas into the plasma state. So I'm finding things out there that already are in existence, like the Beckett oil burner igniter. Runs off of 12 volts DC and uses in the milliamp range of how much is necessary to run that doggone little generator, transformer. And so with that said, I take that energy and I dump it into a containment unit that has argon inside there, energize that argon into the plasma state, and the higher I hit that voltage up, the hotter that plasma gets. Now, what are you going to do with that energy from that point on? You could either use it wirelessly, or you could take that same energy and take it away in the form of heat, because light is heat and heat is light. So if you've got a copper tubing or stainless steel tubing inside there, while that energy is going around inside there, it's going to heat up whatever you circulate through that tubing, and then you can move it on down the line. You see what I'm saying? And so that is plausible technology, and it's right there. It's already been there. It was there for the plasma ball. It was there for the mercury arc rectifier, and the mercury arc rectifier goes all the way back to the late 1800s. And so that technology showed that you can actually change the energy from high voltage AC into high voltage DC and still be able to run stuff with it. So in the conservation of energy, they say energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed. You can change the frequency, you can change the form of the energy, You know, it ain't no different than boiling water or, you know, cooking stuff on your cook stove through convection or what's the other, induction heating. There's many different methods out there. And so taking these energies away from the generator head would put a less of a load on the generator, a less of a load on the drivetrain, and make that thing work even more efficiently. So, now that I got all that out right there, I want to jump back into the doggone deal where they're spinning water up at they call it cavitation. There's a guy that built a pump system that runs off an electric motor. And what it did was essentially it was a disc that had a bunch of holes inside there strategically placed so that it would push the water in inside there. Where he figured this thing out was a long time ago when he was working with a boiler system, and he noticed that he kept getting this water hammer, all right, when he's pumping water through there.
The euphemistic name for it is the water hammer.
Well, essentially, it's like when you got the pressure going through the water, and then that water is going down the pipe. If it hits anything, such as a lip on a valve or an angle in the pipe, then that water slams into the pipe, right? And it makes a big bang sound. And you also get it with steam generation, because there's still some water molecules left that are being pushed by pressurized steam. And as that pressurized steam is going flying down this tube, it slams into something and it makes about loud bang. That's why they call it a water hammer. Well, so he figured out that if you took and circulated water really fast and created a situation to where you created your own man-made water hammer, then that water would slam into the side of the deal and start heating up that water. And just by circulating it alone would spin those molecules around and bash them into each other and create friction as well. If you spin them up at high RPMs, he was raising the water temperature up to literally create steam out the other side. Now the first...
In seconds.
Yeah, in seconds. And the first initial claim was that they were getting 70% more energy out than they were getting in. Now, I can't confirm nor deny that deal, but I do know that as after listening to Raymond talk about the expansion of steam... Steam expands a massive amount more than its original volume, you know, from water to steam. There's a massive expansion. So that massive expansion tells me that there's a whole lot of pressure. In a contained system, you could run turbines off of this deal. You know, by taking an electric motor, spinning this rotor that is spinning the water, getting it up to hot enough to in seconds to literally produce steam, you can take that steam, pump it through turbines, and then turn generator heads with it. And if it truly indeed is over unity, if you're getting out 70% more energy than you're putting in, then you got plenty enough that you could literally bring some of that back around to help run that electric motor. You see what I mean?
I looked into that a good while back, Shaziz. I think we even spoke about it on the show when we were back on TNS. But it's definitely technology that we could move forwards with.
Well,
aren't we?
Water is a dipole molecule, which means it has a positive and a negative field on it, positive and negative poles on it. And so that's why whenever you turn your microwave oven on and the magnetron inside there sends a microwave out, a microwave is a short, fast wave. And as it's going through that water molecule, the peaks and valleys, the north and south, the magnetic field of that wave coming through there rocks that water molecule back and forth so rapidly that it produces heat and cooks your food. And so with that said, there are guys out there like Justin Aldridge that has been doing it for a while. He's got an electric motor connected to a disc that has magnets on it, and then he has a copper tubing and a copper plate in front of that. And so when you spin the magnets past the copper, it creates eddy currents inside that copper that in turn creates heat and basically heats the water using magnetism. And so since water is a dipole molecule, if everything that we know is right as far as how that heat is being generated in that copper by that magnetic field fluctuating around rocking them molecules back and forth, then the same thing should apply with being able to rotate a magnet in water, because those water molecules are going to try to align themselves with north and south. So you should be able to, at high RPMs, spin a magnet around just water alone without the copper and get that water temperature to start raising up. And if that is the case, you would have absolutely no back EMF involved in this situation. You would have a system by which you could literally heat water to the boiling point by spinning those magnets fast enough past that water or through the water, either way. And if you was able to do that, you would solve the heating problem instantaneously. What do you think?
Well, let's not forget, Shaziz, that a nuclear reactor is nothing more than a glorified kettle.
Yeah, that's all it's doing. When that uranium's depleting, when those highly radioactive rods are releasing that energy, it's doing exactly what the microwave oven's doing, just with a different form of energy. As it's releasing it, it is speeding up the molecules in the water and causing a reaction. It's causing enough friction, it would in turn creates the heat. And then when those doggone things get depleted enough to where they're not boiling the water hot enough, they're classified as nuclear waste, and so they'll put them in cooling ponds for up to 10 years until they're cool enough to where they can actually bury them in the ground. But either way, even while they're in that cooling pond, there's still energy available there. Even when they finally take them out of the cooling pond and bury them hundreds of feet under the ground, there's still usable energy in there. Some of these materials out there have half-lives that would boggle your mind. You know, like the reactor that they sent out to Pluto. You know, they said it's got a 90-year lifespan. That's one heck of a generator that will put out 200 watts for 90 years. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, as they say, it's depleted uranium, the gift that keeps on giving for 30,000 years.
Yeah.
Unless it's half-life, apparently.
Well, 30,000 years to me, how long does something have to stay running before it's classified as free energy? You know?
That's a good question. Ask me another one.
Well, you know, a magnet. If you take any permanent magnet or rare earth magnet and you set it down, you put magnet paper on there, and you can see the lines of flux in there. Those lines of flux are in reality moving. You know, they will go around until they match the pressure and set right there. You'll see it on the magnet paper. All right. Any jostling of that magnet, you'll see those magnetic fields fluctuate. But either way, it's continuously producing enough energy just from that magnet alone to maintain those magnetic flux lines in a stationary position on that magnet paper for as long as it's sitting there. And what's the half-life of a magnet? You know? So you got to take this magnet and you got to pass it across the coil of wire to get those lines of flux to shake loose the 29th electron on the copper atom to produce electrical current the way that we do it now. Or you can take a TIP 42C transistor, a resistor, and a diode and pulse it with a DC battery and turn around and pulse the coil of wire and get the energy that way. You see what I'm saying? Did I lose you guys?
Nope.
Either way.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay.
You guys got silent there. I must have put you to sleep with my rant. Anyway, the answer's been there all along. Whether it be the cavitation effect to heat water, or magnets to heat water, or whatever, anything's got to be more efficient than what we're doing right now. Right now we use a doggone element. If you've ever studied the elements that are inside your average 220 stove, you would be amazed at how those things actually function. They actually have like a metal inside of a casting that's almost like aluminum or something. And when it gets hot, it's actually molten at the core of that doggone deal. And how you can find out, and I don't suggest it because it's seriously dangerous, but if you nick that casing that's around that core, and that metal will start coming up out of there. It'll ooze right up out of there and literally start a fire. That's how hot it is. You know, and those are the electric elements that's inside your doggone stove. It's dead, direct, short, that heats up that metal inside there. It's inside of a material that can withstand certain temperatures, and so the element itself will get red hot, but it won't melt through because the material inside there has a lower boiling temperature than the material that's actually holding it. But in reality, all it is you're sending electricity in through there, creating a dead short, creating molten metal inside that core, and causing that core to become red hot, and you cook your turkeys with it. What do you think?
Who's the turkey?
I would say my vote goes to Steve. He must have went to sleep.
The goose is cooked.
He headed off to the loo. Oh, man. Anyway.
Actually, I was cooking the goose.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, either way, the element works the same no matter what you're cooking in it. You know, if you're going to boil water with highly radioactive material and then complain about that something went wrong because your plumbing failed or whatever, now you got radioactive water steam spewing out of the doggone thing. And you know what? There's some supposedly geniuses out there. And do you know what the control rods are inside a nuclear reactor?
Is that the stick that they run around and beat Homer Simpson with when he presses the wrong button?
No, and inside every single radioactive reactor, they have to have a way to be able to slow down the release of the radioactivity, which actually doesn't slow it down for it releasing, it just blocks it out. So essentially the ions coming off of the radioactive material will be caught by the control rods, and the more control rod that is in front of it, the less heat that it will produce. So they actually built the equivalence of a volume knob that they can turn the heat up and down with. Well, these things are held in place by an electromagnet, all right? And the big old deal here recently was everyone was freaking out because this one particular plant had 10 control rods fall off of the electromagnet and down into the core. And so they're all like panicking, oh no, the control rods are down in the core, this is terrible, you know, we're all going to die and all that kind of stuff. What they didn't understand was that meant that doggone nuclear reactor was now not functioning to its full potential because the control rods were blocking out the doggone energy. So you just turn the volume down. They're made so that if something goes wrong and the power's cut, that electromagnet will drop those control rods down into that reactor to stop the reaction so that they can cool the thing down. But the lack of understanding of how this thing even functions had everybody into panic mode. People were doing videos about it. Oh man, this is terrible. And I get on there and I'm like, does anybody even realize what a control rod does inside a nuclear reactor? What's all the hubbub about? You want them to fall down. If there's an emergency, you want them to go down in there to stop the heat.
Well, Chaziz, does anybody panic when somebody puts their foot on an emergency brake on a San Francisco streetcar?
Well, they'd probably get a little ticked off whenever they go flying forward.
Well, it's a lot better than going straight down that incredibly steep hill into the sea.
Well, then that would be something that I would thank them for, even though I face planted in the floor because I wasn't paying attention. It's like, There's a guy that I won the. I can't remember. I think it was. Doggone it! You just said the guy's name earlier. The Monty Python the series. There was a show similar to that. It might even have been Monty Python, where this one English guy. He's like so super polite. He gets hit by a car. He gets up. Oh no, that's my fault. You know, and all this, and then he goes through a door, and somebody smashes him in the face. You know, oh, it's all right. It's all my fault. You know, and gets shoved down the stairs. And by the time it's all said and done, this guy was completely brutalized, but polite through the entire deal. I'm like, my God, that poor guy. He'd been through the ringer. Anyway, that's the mentality you see going on out there. So, where do we go to from here, guys?
To be human is to So,
Alright, so we got the technology out there. Anybody interested in trying to move forward with any of the technology and you need a place to talk about it, ShazizRadio.com is a really good place to do so. Jump over to the Super Chat HTML, hook up with us on Skype. We got a few groups on Skype right there. And as long as you ain't trolling or trying to disrupt, then we might invite you into our personal little circle of people with ideas trying to get things done. It's all about networking and doing things like Zero Fossil Fuel does over there, where you have a virtual lab scenario to where other people who are free thinkers as well can come over there and ask you questions real time and vet the technology. Because, you know, he don't want to waste his time and money doing stuff over there. You know, he wants to actually get some results. He wants to actually find some answers to different deals. And guys like Robert Murray Smith and there's other guys out there. Mark Danzy had talked to Zero Fossil Fuel about some exotic materials that people were researching that actually all you had to do was put these two materials together, and for some reason they would literally produce a current. You know, and you didn't have to have any kind of movement or whatsoever. There wasn't no heat involved. There wasn't no... all it was is these two particular materials that they come up with, putting them together, would actually produce a voltage. So, you know, it's interesting technology. And once it's out there on the table and everybody can test it and vet it and try to bring it in the right direction, you know, to make something useful out of it, you know, there's... they call it memory metal out there. I can't remember the name of that. Anyone of you guys know what that stuff's called? Where you heat it up to like 500 degrees and then shape it the way you want it, and then whenever it cools back down, you can literally straighten it out and it will bounce back into its shape.
I think there's different types of that stuff too, so the it depends on the temperature you're going to be getting it to, as opposed to what temperature it's going to be required to shape it.
Yeah. Well, there were some guys out there doing
some... version, then it has to be heated up even more.
There were some guys out there doing some research on that, such as they, you know, they would... you can do it one way or another. You can either shape it while it's one temperature or whatever. However you shape it, whatever temperature you shape it at, whenever you, like, dip it in water, this stuff will actually, you know, put itself back into shape. You know, when it's heated up and cooled down, then you could bend it out, drop it in some cool water, and the doggone thing would go back to its original shape. They called it like memory metal or something like that. You can actually buy it on eBay. But it's really fascinating stuff.
Which is this, to be human is to so ask me another question.
All right, well, I think that I want to do some more research into that cavitation effect. I want to actually try to just spin magnets alone in water, because water is a dipole molecule and it's going to want to align itself accordingly. I mean, you can't see with your eyes, you know, unless you take... I took a magnet and I was waving it back and forth across the face of the water, but I couldn't tell whether or not it was the wind off my hand moving the water, or when I run it up underneath, I couldn't tell whether or not it was the magnet grabbing a piece of the table, you know, part of the table, causing a vibration or whatever, but I was getting motion in that water because the water molecules would be trying to align themselves with whichever direction that field was going. So I need to do some sort of controlled experiment where I can see if you can actually move water with a magnet. What I did find out, though, I watched a video, and the guy had a flat neodymium magnet, basically a hard drive magnet, something to the equivalence of, had it sitting down into a pool of water where the water was just slightly deeper than the height of the magnet. But you could see that at around that doggone magnet, you would actually have where the water was pushed away and bulged up around. And there were some guys coming in there complaining about how this was just some sort of other event going on, and it wasn't no big deal or anything like that. However, and I put a little electric motor with a round magnet out of one of these old water pumps and spun that thing around in the water, you could actually see that the water wasn't even touching the magnet at one point. It was being pushed away from the magnet. The water was being pushed away, and it would get to really high RPMs as that water spinning around inside there. You understand what I'm trying to say here? No, duh.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Anyway, if what they say about the water molecule being a dipole molecule, then it should be interacting with a magnetic field, which the magnetron in the microwave oven proves that that's the case. If a microwave is a magnetic flux, a magnetic pulse field, whatever, if that's how it all works, then there you go. You should be able to spin a magnet through water and heat that water up. We'll find out. So what do you guys think? Yeah.
Why don't we just stick with the water hammer?
Well, that's a good one.
And find some sort of high RPM mechanism that's going to output energy.
Well, there are a lot of motors out there. They are getting some really impressive RPMs out there. There are some brushless DC motors that they advertise, say they'll go up to 35,000 RPMs. That's pretty doggone fast.
Well, Chizzy's, I just had a thought there. oh, God, I've lost it.
Well,
it was kind of along the lines of the armature out of a drill, where if you turned it by hand, you get direct AC-DC current.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we set up a water hammer to spin, say, a propeller blade, put on the end of an armature, and see if we can directly output AC current?
Well, if you think about how the automatic transmission in a car works, all right, automatic transmissions have to have a cooling system to actually cool down that fluid. Part of which is because of the friction of the bearings and the gears turning inside there, but another part of it could be part of that cavitation effect. When you send the fluid, when you start spinning your motor around your engine on your car, there is a hydraulic effect that occurs inside the torque converter where the spin of the fluid creates a centrifugal force, and the pressure of this centrifugal force inside there will actually cause the clutches inside the transmission to turn, which then in turn turns the gears and your drive shaft on down the line. So with that said, if you can spin water at high RPMs, you can use that centrifugal force and that hydraulic pressure to literally turn turbines just like you mentioned there. You see what I mean?
Well, wouldn't that be the overall gain?
Yeah.
Electricity. However you do it, it doesn't have to be with magnets, it doesn't have to be with this device or that device. Just make the energy.
Well, if anybody knows anything about how hydraulics works, a positive displacement pump is a pump that will allow fluid flow to go one direction and one direction only. All right, and that pressure that is built up by forcing that water pressure through that doggone deal and not being able to go back the other way is what is able to lift the arms of your, like your bobcats and your backhoes and tractors and all that kind of stuff. Lifts them hydraulics arms with that doggone pressure. So hydraulics is an amazing way to get a lot, an extreme amount of torque out of it. So if you had something that was centrifugally spinning a fluid of some sort in through a one direction deal to where you're building massive amounts of pressure up inside there, you could create enough torque that would be mind boggling. You'd actually have to get rid of some of that doggone pressure at some point, or you'd be blowing seals out everywhere. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, where there's a will, there's a way. We could actually build, using existing technologies, heck, probably even use an automatic transmission out of an old 70s model car and use that doggone torque converter system to actually get some dang work done out of it. You know, an automatic transmission is set up because your motor itself doesn't have enough horsepower to actually run that car down the road at the speeds that it goes. You know, what happens is your motor will spin at a really high RPM when you throttle it up, and then that high RPM is translated through the automatic transmission's torque converter using the centrifugal force, which then in turn turns the clutches, that turns the gears, and it's the gear ratios that they'll start off in the lowest gear so that you have the most amount of pulling power, and then work its way up just like a 10-speed bicycle does. If you've ever been on a 10-speed bike and you started off in the lowest or the highest gear, you know how hard it is to start pedaling. But if you start off in the lowest gear, then it will be easy to pedal at first, and then it'll get easier for every gear that you go down until you're finally up in the 10-speed and you're cruising right along. That's exactly how the automatic transmission works. So you can actually build up the torque, use the torque first to get the doggone thing spinning, and once you get it up to high enough RPMs on your generator head, you could pull that energy away using technology like I'm talking about, while you're changing that energy off of the generator head into a completely different state, and then turn around and using that energy where you're not having to fight that drivetrain in order to be able to get the energy that you need to run your house. It's all simple, man.
Well, think about it, Shaziz. We spoke about it a number of years ago. Beam engines. They were using beam engines based on steam power, usually powered by coal to heat water, to pump air in and water out of mines in Australia back in the late 1800s.
Well, we were sitting there, me and a friend of mine was sitting there yesterday for several hours troubleshooting building a rotary engine. The average internal combustion engine now, basically you got pistons which are connected to a camshaft you got an intake and an exhaust port inside the cylinder. And essentially what happens is you squirt your fuel inside there, the spark plug or the igniter system ignites the fuel, and then the explosion pushes down the piston, which turns the camshaft, and so on. But the problem with the average vehicle these days is you waste more fuel trying to drive your car than is necessary to actually run the car. You have to have the air-fuel mixture perfect so that you're not running too lean, as they would call it, or, you know, the other way, where you're going to smoke like heck. But the modern-day cars have injector systems in there where it's, you know, a little bit more efficient way to use the fuel, but it's still, at the same sense, dumping entirely too much fuel down that doggone deal. You're wasting more fuel. If that weren't the case, you wouldn't need a catalytic converter, which is nothing more than a reburner of waste fuel. And if you study real hard on your catalytic converter, you'll note that there is a pipe that comes off the side of your catalytic converter that runs right back up into the intake, so some of the waste will get reburnt down through the intake portion of the deal. Well, if you design this right from the get-go and you vaporize that fuel before you ever even ignite it, and you have your air fuel mixture perfect on this deal, you could literally build a rotary engine designed pretty similar to the pneumatic air tools that they use. And if you've ever seen the pneumatic air tools, you understand that just by using anywhere from 60 to 80 PSI, you're getting some amazing RPMs out of those air tools, all right? And if you want to take that, translate that air pressure into torque, they have a system that is like a hammer that is, you know, turning a socket around. It's when it's spinning around, the hammer's slapping onto a cam that's kicking that doggone socket around. So you're able to take a nut off of a, like a lug nut off your car that's been cranked down on there really tight. You can zip it right off like it ain't nothing, you know?
Think NASCAR pit crews.
Yeah. Look how fast that they can change a whole set of tires on that dang car, man. But imagine you take that information from what you learn from a pneumatic air tool, and you combine that in with the internal combustion engine, and you build it pretty much in a similar fashion. Then when you shoot that first set of fuel down in, you inject the first vaporized jet of fuel down in there, it's instantaneously ignited and spins that rotor around. Then when that rotor gets to a certain point, there's an exhaust port that dumps right directly into the next cylinder. And so that heat that is going into the next cylinder begins the turning of the next cylinder. By that time, you could use Hall effect sensors as a timing to jet in another mist in the second cylinder. And then the same process would repeat itself over for how many ever cylinders you wanted in line. But you would be using that fuel so incredibly efficient, because you're not only using the fuel, using less fuel, but you're using the exhaust off of that fuel to literally ignite to help assist the next cylinder in line to shove that thing around. You see what I mean? And it functions just like a pneumatic engine, but it's an internal combustion engine. It would be so super simple for somebody to tool in a machine shop that it would be ridiculous. What do you think?
I think it's time that we got a decent 3D metal printer.
Yeah. Boy, if I had a 3D metal printer.
Because they're exceptionally expensive to buy, and they're very, very energy inefficient. The ones that are out there now, they just basically lay powder out and fuse it together with a laser.
If I had
forever too.
If I had access to the right crew that I would call the dream team, and we had access to a machine shop and all the tools and material, I would guarantee you and stake my reputation on that within less than 30 days' time, You turn me and that crew loose inside of a doggone machine shop, and we will come out of there with a guaranteed 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, provable alternative energy device that at the very least will be so doggone efficient it would be ludicrous.
See, I think you made a mistake there, man. You didn't, in that 30 days' time, you didn't account for the extra trips to the hardware store for the stuff we forgot.
Well, I'm saying 30 days time because I actually believe we could do it in less than a week. But I want 30 days time because I know that Murphy's Law is going to kick in and somebody's got to go to the hardware store like you mentioned.
No, what we need is we need some local thug who's trying to extort money from, say, farmers or something like that, to lock us up into a perfectly equipped workshop or tool shed. And within 20 minutes, we'll find all the tools and materials that we need to save the day, like the 18.
Yeah, and we'll be able to get out at the same time.
Yeah.
Make a break for it.
Hey. So who's Hannibal here?
Well, then you
not me.
Cambridge gun was kind of my personal favorite.
Hannibal's freaky, man.
I guess Steve can be Mr. T.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm MODOK.
I want to be the guy with the wild hair.
No, I already got that one, mate.
Oh, Lord, rats. Okay, can we have two guys with wild hair?
No, I don't want to fly with you.
Well, I don't want to dress like you or anything. I mean, we don't have to like be like twins or anything. I just want to like have the wild hair, because Mad Science, if you're a Mad Science guy, you got to have the wild hair. I mean, look at the Back to the Future
run around saying they don't let us out much.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, you know, like I said, though, it all of it's there. Every bit of it's there. It don't matter. We could use the centrifugal force that's created by this internal combustion engine that I just talked about to create a cavitation effect that would actually create more heat. And, you know, most generally you don't want your engine to get hot. But we could use this engine for a totally different purpose. Now, imagine a futuristic hybrid perfectly tuned internal combustion engine that its only purpose was to boil water into steam. That sounds crazy, don't it? But we know that steam pressure will expand multitudes times larger than its initial volume once it's flashed into steam, which then in turn you could turn turbines with.
Which is this?
Yeah.
If you can use, say, a 750-watt hand drill to spin a cavitation system fast enough to create steam pressure, and then you could push that into a pressurization system that could give you, say, X amounts of pounds per square inch of pressure in the thousands of pounds, and say you had the steel tubing capable of surviving those sort of strengths, then go and get a hamster wheel, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Stick some magnets on it and start firing this steam through with a recirculation vent, which would work as a braking mechanism. So instead of it kind of blowing the wheel off its rungs, so to speak, or its spindle, if it's going too fast, you've got a recirculation pipe where you can bleed off some of the pressure hitting the face of the wheel. You know, it's kind of really, really simple. And how difficult would it be to build something that could produce sufficient watts to power a home from something powered by a hand drill?
I think it's plausible. I mean, if you look at the internal combustion engine, the average one that's sitting out there right now, even going all the way back to when the motor was actually built to begin with, they keep on saying over unity is not possible. But if you go out there and you cut the hose on your radiator and start running that doggone thing, it will literally destroy itself. It will produce so much heat that it will literally destroy itself. If you don't have oil flowing through there to keep it lubricated and cooled down, if you don't have a water jacket going through there to keep that engine cooled down, it will literally produce so much heat that it will destroy itself. Now, you could take that same doggone engine out there and you could run it into a boiler system and run that motor and keep that doggone motor perfectly cool by the whatever volume of water that you want to keep warm. You see what I mean? You can take away that doggone heat. So, that motor in itself, to me, proves over unity. It proves that, you know, if you take one thing away from it, you got a junk motor. It's trash. It will literally either vibrate itself apart, it'll either melt itself, or have a catastrophic explosion, one way or another. But it's right there in front of your face, man. You know, people out there running their generators during, you know, times when the power goes out, they could also be heating your water with that same doggone generator. And that would just be of nothing more than the waste heat that is actually generated by the internal combustion engine itself. So there are methods there. You know, we talked about the Pelletier elements, using those on the outside of the doggone thing to generate some electricity. The Pelletier element isn't going to put any drain on the engine. It's just going to use the waste heat to generate some electricity. So you ain't got no load back to the drivetrain. The waste heat off of it could be taken away from the doggone thing in the form of heating up your hot water, or even letting it get hot enough to put it into steam. You know, your average engine runs at what, 180 to 200 degrees, some up higher than that, 220. You see what I mean?
Well, she says, don't forget that the solar-powered engines like the solar heating technologies.
Yeah.
Can get up to temperatures of up to 210 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, and even your car sitting out in the sunlight, you know, you get a lot of heat. You could literally bake a cake in your car in the summertime.
That's why you leave a crack of the window open when you put Grandpa in it.
Yeah, or the dogs or
just
the kids.
Just go to the store and be back in 2 hours.
But either way, you know, there you go, man. You can bake a cake in your doggone car that isn't even running, just letting the sun heat it up. You know, it's just so simple to me in my mind. It just drives me freaking bonkers that people aren't taking all these things that they don't want in energy devices and using that waste energy to do something beneficial. You realize how much better and how longer a standard electrical generator would last if you could keep that thing down to a certain temperature, its bare minimum operating temperature, you know?
Which is the Alpha 8400s that I worked on when I was in Vodafone's billing department. These are mid-range servers. If the temperature in the server room went above 38 degrees Celsius, then the systems would shut down because they couldn't handle the heat.
Well, and that's another brilliant thing. That's another brilliant thing right there that you mentioned, because some of these supercomputers out there, you can actually go out and Google the top 10 supercomputers, and you'd be amazed to see at the size of the water cooling systems that they have in order to keep these processors down to the right temperature.
They don't work as efficiently, and there's a chance of the circuitry actually burning out.
Yeah.
If your ambient room temperature is 38 degrees, that means that your CPUs are a lot hotter. Now, over the last 15 odd years, things have improved greatly. I mean, this is around about August 2000. We're nearly 15, 16 years on from there.
Yep.
And even the processing energy requirements. The first series of the i7-9 series processor, I bought the first generation, the 940, and it used, 165 watts of power at full capacity. Although you'll never get a CPU running at 100%, it'll always kind of slow down at about 98, 99. Now I have the i7-440 series, 4000 series, and it uses about 65 watts. So you dropped 100 watts of energy requirement because they're getting more kind of nodes into the processor itself. So the amount of transistors, you're talking millions versus billions over like a 5 or 6 year period. So, I mean, things are getting faster, they're getting cheaper, and they're using less energy.
Let me ask you a question, since you're pretty familiar with the CPUs. Now, when these things go bad, they won't process information like they used to, because essentially it's pretty much fried inside that CPU. But even a bad one, would a bad one still get hot?
Well, basically what you've got is like the Vatican argument of how many angels are there on the head of a pin. And if you take 1 square centimeter of your CPU, which is, 2.5 centimeters by 2.5 centimeters, you're talking of billions and billions of transistors. And the heat comes from the energy passing through it.
Yeah.
And it's all based on ones and zeros, really. So it can all be brought down to a yes or no answer. But that means they have to ask millions and millions of questions per second to get the right answer, to follow the instructions that you're putting into it. And when some of those transistors fail, then there's like a short circuit.
So,
and you know, it's no open circuit, so you can't get power to flow through it.
So you'd
have to oscillate the power going into it to get heat out of it. So, like you're wanting.
So what?
That's primarily
what
why it gets so hot.
It's positive and negative charges hitting the transistors, really.
Okay, let me clarify. So, when the transistor goes completely bad, as far as it won't give you the ones and zeros anymore, all right? The material that the transistor's made out of, if you still keep putting energy through that, will that material still get hot?
That's a good question. I mean, if you can't get the energy to flow through it, then it's not going to do anything at all.
Yeah, if it's like cuts the circuit completely when the transistor goes bad, then obviously my answer would be no, it wouldn't work. However, I have been able to take a tungsten element light bulb out of a automobile and shoot 20,000 volts through there and still get that thing to light up, because the energy coming in through that 20,000 volts literally arcs across to the other side and heats up the element anyway. So I was able to light up a dead light bulb.
When they started making quad-core, 6-core, 8-core processors, it was kind of interesting, because when it goes through its... I read an article on this quite a while back. When it goes through its product testing, some of the 8-core processors, one of the cores failed. So what they did is they put it out as a 6-core processor. But there's some really clever individuals out there that worked out a way to turn on the 7th core.
Wow. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say here is that it'd be interesting to run some tests to see that if a transistor or a processor just went completely bad, whether or not, even though it won't work for the processing portion of it, whether or not if you still put the energy through there, if you could actually get that thing to get hot even though it's bad. I mean, so it's not totally burnt in half, but you can still pass energy through it. Would the materials in that thing still actually get hot? That would be the question.
Well, for a processor to work effectively, you've got to be able to run positive and negative charges through it to simulate the ones and zeros needed for yes and no answers.
Yeah.
And if part of that CPU is damaged, then that, as Tom said, the open circuit is not going to be there anymore.
But what if you stepped up the voltage to leap across that gap that was burnt?
Then you probably just blow up your computer.
Well, I'm not trying to run it as a computer. I'm just actually trying to see whether or not I can actually get heat out of a bad processor. You know, I use it for a totally different purpose. It's no longer part of a computer. It's just a piece of junk. And I want to see if by passing voltage through that, you know, I can get some heat out of that doggone thing.
If you put enough energy into anything, it'll heat up.
Well, it really don't take a whole lot of energy to run your computer, you know?
Well, bearing in mind, it might be 165 watts, but it really goes above 12 volts.
I've run some little transistors, and I got those things hot enough that whenever I reached down to see if the doggone transistor was getting warm, I realized it was hot, and it actually burnt my finger. Well,
voltage isn't important if you're talking about it. That tells you how much actual power you've got.
Yeah.
If it's got X amount of wattage and it's a really high voltage, and that means it's using next to no amperage. So.
Well, it's basically exploring every single avenue, every single potential, even the ones that are burned up. Maybe something's still good. If I can light up a dead light bulb just by passing more energy through it than it's normally set up to run, you know, and... We're not talking about a lot of watts either. We're just talking about, I'm just sending a high voltage through there, which is vibrating that tungsten and producing heat. See, if you get control of heat, then you got it made. The whole alternative energy thing is something of the past, because heat is what takes the hardest, it's the biggest portion of your doggone electric bill, number one, because it's the most resistive load. And so
it is if you don't live in Southern California, where, you know, it's always warm enough, you don't need any heat.
Well, if I lived in Southern California, or even in the desert for that matter, I would be,
it's about getting rid of heat.
I would be monopolizing that heat. I'd have me a massive Stirling engine out there running. You know, something. You know, they talk about by this year, actually 2016, that the houses in California have to be 0 point. So how do you get to 0 point? They're talking about they got to put solar and wind or whatever alternative energies up so that even existing structures have to meet 0 point by a certain period of time. All right, well, how are you going to get there if ain't nobody checking these technologies out that we're talking about? They're talking about people having to retrofit their house.
You don't have to check anything according to bureaucrats. You just have to fine the crap out of people for not doing what you tell them to do.
Yeah, well, they said
jailing them. Then they'll find a way.
They said it would cost $50,000 per household to retrofit existing houses and newer houses into be 0 point and running off of solar and wind. So if you've got an old house, you're in trouble.
Shizzies.
Yeah.
Right here in River City.
What are the planning costs or planning fees to submit your drawings to the local authority to put all this stuff up? Because they're saying it costs $50,000 per household to retrofit, but how much of that is in government fees to get permission to do it, even though you're legally obliged to do it?
That's a good question, because I checked out a solar panel system for my house, and the guy told me it could range anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 and up to do solars, but even at $20,000 would run my entire house. So $50,000, somebody's got an extra $30,000 going on there. So you're right, where's it going?
And as part of this retrofitting of your household, is the government approved contractors that you're supposed to buy this stuff from?
More than likely. It'd be like,
so if you don't buy certain solar panels from certain corporations that are recommended by your local authority, are you going to get fined for not using proven technology?
Probably. If you go down to Honest Abe's used solar panels and throw them up on your house, you'll probably get busted out of the doggone neighborhood and fined.
Well, I mean, if you're kind of buying your solar panels from Alibaba.com from the Xinhai province of China, which is where everybody else gets them from, by the way, but because you've the temerity to go and buy them direct.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I actually read an article in the news recently about a guy that had retrofitted his house in the US in, where was it? It was Oregon, with solar panels, and he bought them directly from the Chinese markets and not gone through a local dealer, and the local dealer was trying to sue him because he had the exclusive distribution rights for that.
Jeez. See? There's a roadblock. That's a hindrance. How are we going to get anything done? We can't get anything done. It's too much doggone red tape. That's why I tell everybody, don't ask for permission.
Too many hands degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah, just do it.
Just
don't
do
ask
it.
Permission and don't tell them that you did it, you know?
It's kind of ironic that in the third world, as they call it, which is probably not that far behind us, to be honest, they're talking about graft, where if you have something that comes in a customs port, you have to pay somebody to stamp a piece of paper for you to make it legal.
That's ridiculous.
And those fees don't necessarily go into the government coffers, they go into the person's pocket. Now, I don't necessarily see a lot of difference between the European Union, the American legal system, and graft. Because you've got to pay all these people that are not working under any constitutional authority, not any legal authority at all. They're quangos. They're a bunch of cousins of politicians where they've legislated and paid large sums of money to set up businesses where you're supposed to hand over money and authority, more importantly, to them. So well, they can tell you how to live your life when the average reasonable person is not going to go and install something in their home that's going to burn it down anyway.
Well, heck no, man. It's already cost you out the eyeball for insurance. Look, I've said this a million times to everybody out there, and if you go back and pay attention to what I've been talking about in my podcast and the YouTube videos, I tell you, there are permanent magnet motors in treadmills, 30-volt permanent magnet motors in treadmills. Those are our ready-built generator. He'll hook you a windmill up to that doggone thing. Build it out of PVC plumbing. and an old circular fan or ceiling fan blades or whatever, or you could have Muddy show you how to carve up a doggone by going over his, he'll show you how to carve a prop. Alright, well, you throw that up there, you hook it to a little battery, you run one light in your room off of that, and that's the only power source that you have for that one particular light. For every single light bulb that you take off the power grid, that's pennies in your pocket. Now imagine you gradually work your way up and you got all these devices running around that are bringing energy out, whether it be solar or wind or hydroelectrics or thermoelectrics or using heat like you for your car getting hot, you know. Heck, turn your doggone car into a doggone heater, man. Run a vent from the car window out into your window of your house when your car's sitting out in your yard getting hot during the winter time when the sun's out, then that heat will translate into your doggone house. I mean, there's tons and tons of different things that are already on the market, things that you can get a hold of, old washing machine motors, the brushless motors out of doggone hard drives. You can make little wind generators out of those. There's toys out there that have permanent magnet electric motors in them. There's, you know, like I said, washing machine motors, air conditioner motors, things that people throw in the doggone dump because they won't function the way they're supposed to with the circuitry. Turn them backwards and you got a doggone generator. Any motor out there that already has magnets in it is a generator right out of the gate. No modifications, just slap you a turbine on that thing. Turn it with the creek down the street or the river or the ocean waves or whatever, and use that energy to take at least one or two light bulbs off your doggone house, and then the money that you save, just keep throwing it back in the bank and go out and buy you some cheapo solar panels and do that for another light or two. Before too long, you're already off the doggone grid. You're still connected to the grid, but you ain't using as much energy because you're not wasting it in the light. And if you can get the heating portion solved of it, long time ago they made these little boxes, and there's a YouTube video out there. It's a window box, and it's kind of like off at an angle. It's got little cans and stuff inside there that are spray painted black, and you open your window up, you slide it inside your window, and then you close your window down on top of the thing. And what happens is, while the sun's beating down outside on this thing, it's circulating hot air into your room. So
you don't even need to put it on your window. There's designs and techniques now where you can mount it as maybe a 9 foot high, 3 foot wide panel on the outside of a home. And
yeah,
people are heating their houses in Canada with this. There's a guy who I rang him and spoke to him in person. I'm not really into promoting products, but the guy's device was called CanSolaire. And he seemed pretty genuine. You know, he'd come up with a design and he'd like to have a reasonable life on, you know, building this system, recycling old Coke cans, painting them black, building you a unit that you could have retrofitted into the side of your house, so you could have a heating system.
Yeah. Instead of throwing them cans in the dump, plugging up the dump, you know, there's so many different repurposed portions of it. Heck, old pieces of electrical conduit, like they use to run electrical wire through, you know, the metal ones, the galvanized, you know, that kind of pipe. A whole bunch of strands of tubing through a box and spray painted all black so it absorbed the heat, you know.
Well, shazis, I mean, we kind of... we've got the mentality that we want to find technology and give it to people that they can use themselves. But there are people out there that are kind of designing and developing various different systems as small commercial interests that maybe we should pay a little bit more attention to as well. Because it seems that, look in Spain, you'll never get a bill from the sun for the photonic energy that you're using to collect in solar panels to provide energy to your home with. But
yep,
you will get a bill from the Spanish government because for some reason they feel that they own the energy that comes from the sun, or more likely they want to replace their money that they would get from you using the mains power grid system and the taxes that they collect for that. So where people are turning to alternative energies, now you're being charged by the state for using alternative energies. So if the whole global warming thing was true, You wouldn't be paying them. They would be paying you.
Yeah, I rest my case. I agree with you 150,000%. It's ridiculous. You know? And if the whole
That's not proof that global warming isn't true, because they will find any excuse to make money, including capitalizing on an actual catastrophic event.
Oh, I wasn't saying whether it was true or not.
Well, as far as I'm concerned,
you don't trust these people as far as you kick them.
As far as I'm concerned,
for permission, just do it.
The whole,
and don't tell them you did it either.
The basic science. As far as I'm concerned, the basic science of global warming disproves itself. So I'm not even worried about that. I'm not even going to argue over whether it is or it isn't. If you don't understand basic science, then you just pay your carbon tax and move right along. I'm not buying it.
To me, climate change is Kirk versus Picard all over again.
Yeah, it's a doggone natural cycles. It's a doggone natural cycles. If we got that much power to literally heat up the planet, we can heat the planet, for Pete's sake. We can heat your house. That's what I'm saying.
I've no doubt whatsoever that we do have man-made climate change, and I wish those men would stop doing it.
Yeah. Stop spraying crud in the air, because it's not healthy for the insects or the people or whatever. But there you go. You're a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist for mentioning that, Steve. Doggone you. You can trust your government.
Truth. There's no world. Like, you make true about drowning polar bears and people killing gas. Kim Farley are the ones that kind of were responsible for most of it. And he set up a climate carbon exchange system. So third world developing countries can't develop, because the only way they can kind of run their own societies and cultures is to use inappropriate mechanisms.
Well, from what I understand, from my understanding of the continent of Africa, they are wealthy. They are extremely wealthy, but have the poorest people pretty much on the planet. People living in squalor and poverty when they should be able to have every luxury and then some that we got. You know, I think they're literally afraid of Africa becoming a powerful nation, because if they use their resources, you know, for themselves, as opposed to having to worry about, you know, who they got to buy off or fend off from other directions, they got enough resources over there to literally build a really nice community for everybody.
So this, was it Jonathan Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman? If you want to know why Africa is truly so underdeveloped, go and find out why they've been given, like, petty dictators large sums of loans to build bridges and the rest of it. And then why the military-industrial complex has made seriously large amounts of money of the weapons that they bought with the money that they've been loaned.
Oh yeah, if you can keep the people oppressed and the wars continuing, nobody can build nothing when you're blowing it all up. Your Middle East over there is a prime example. Those folks, I swear half of them must be mentally ill, because they're sitting on a gold mine because everybody wants their oil. But there's such a doggone mess going on over there. They're not even blowing themselves up. They're blowing each other up. And in the process, you know, wasting everything that they got. You know, you know what I would say if I was over there? I'd probably get bombed. I'd probably be the first, my presidency or dictatorship or whatever it is over in that general vicinity would be like 24 hours if I made it that long. Because the first thing I tell everybody, I says, no soup for you. You ain't getting no oil. You jive turkey, step out. We're going to use it for ourselves. Right? And then I would start building my country up. But, no. They want to fight over each other's land. They want to blow each other up. They got other nations willing to come in there to help them to manipulate markets. And they're wasting their resources. So you got a Middle East mess. You got an African continent where everybody over there should be living in comfort. You know, these folks in Dubai, those are the most amazing people I've ever met in my entire life. They built the land that they're got their skyscrapers on. They got huge desalination plants. They're probably one of the most wealthiest places on the doggone planet. And they built it in...
Shaziz, I have to put you straight there. The people in Dubai were approached by Henry Kissinger in the 60s and told, we are going to give you billions of dollars for your oil, but there's a trade-off for that. You have to pay off a percentage of our national debt, and the national debt was based on empirical wars against third world countries that were acting against US interests. So the people of the Middle East, particularly Dubai, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, have been paid billions because they sold their oil in dollars.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example of this. Recently, India and Iran have dropped the dollar as the reserve international currency, and now Iran is accepting rupees as a currency to buy their oil with, because every single dollar that is used to buy and sell oil with has an attachment on it to pay off some of America's national debt.
Well, there you go. What I was trying to point out, though, mostly was the ingenuity of the folks that are actually in that general vicinity. I mean, the guys and gals in Venice that live essentially on top of the water, you know. Where there's a will, there's a way. There's folks living in the harshest portions of Alaska, you know. People out there got igloos and stuff. They built their house out of natural resources right there on spot. You know, that's ingenuity. You can build a house and stay warm and be able to live in what would normally be, you wouldn't last long out there. But they're doing it.
It's kind of interesting that when they built the L2 power station, I think it is, in Canada, they said, oh, well, nobody can live there apart from the native Canadians, that are indigenous Canadians that have been there for about 10,000 years. But, you know, Western man can't.
Well, my discouragement with my own particular government is not that I'm anti-government. I'm anti-corruption. I'm anti-stupidity. I'm anti-lack of common sense. And I'm anti-hypocrisy. And the hypocrisy of them telling you that they want to protect the children on one hand, but bombing some folks over on the other side that just so happen to have children on the other hand, while at one point, one side of their neck they're saying global warming, climate change, we got to save the planet kind of deal, they're still making a hell of a mess. Ain't done nothing to fix it.
One philosopher said, how can you protect your own children when you're bombing somebody else's?
Yeah, it's like that. I mentioned this a while back.
It doesn't matter how powerful or influential or clever or ingenious you think you are. If you kill the children of another nation, sooner or later they're going to find a way to make you pay for it.
Yeah,
and to think that you're above and beyond any recriminations.
Which was the point I was trying to bring up about. This little conversation that I've mentioned before on the Knights of the Round Table was that there was a reporter sitting there talking to a couple little Palestinian girls. And they asked these little Palestinian girls, do you ever want peace with Israel? And the little girls turned around and said, no, we don't. We hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy. And so, you know, there you go, right there. That is perpetual. It won't stop. You see what I'm saying? And until you get these governments in check and they're not allowed to run amok to do the things that they do and abuse the people in the ways that they abuse them, until you get control of the banking system and even, for that matter, change the way that society views things as far as, like, this whole gun control issue right now that's going on. All right? Well, first off, you're desensitizing kids by allowing them to play these doggone games where they run amok through these games and shooting and committing crimes and felonies, and you get more points for the more felonies you commit, and you got them on psychotropic drugs, and you got them on different fluorides and stuff like that, and God knows what kind of chemistry set is going on in each of these kids' heads, right? And it's not just the kids, it's the adults. They're all out there. They're cussing each other out. They're running amok. They're raising a ruckus. And meanwhile, the world's spinning out of control on the outside of them. You got folks out there talking about peace and love and we got to save the planet. ain't nothing getting done. It's just getting worse and worse by the doggone minute. And it ain't until somebody gets off the couch and actually changes culture and start raising your children to not hate somebody because they look a little bit different or they believe a different way. You know? And to take and work with those people with the doggone knowledge that they got in their head and the knowledge combined in your head, that's how it gets done, man.
Tom. You there, mate?
Mm-hmm.
How valuable is lithium?
It depends on what process you're wanting to use it for. I don't know.
As a general basic resource, how valuable is lithium to the electronics market of the Western world?
Well, they're using it in lithium ion cells, so I know you can get it out of cell phone batteries and stuff like that. You just have to be careful when you take it out to protect it because it reacts with the air pretty quickly. So,
yeah, but as a natural resource, how valuable is lithium? If you can get,
I don't know. I can't give you that answer. I have no idea.
I would say, due to the market, okay, it's probably a lot.
Well,
what is it?
The Russians, when they were in Afghanistan in the 80s, did a geological survey, and by current measures, they reckon that in 2002. There was $1 trillion worth of surface available lithium ore that they could strip mine. Now, my adopted brother is from Afghanistan, and he went to see a strip mine in Afghanistan, not far from Helmand, where the US government were strip mining it. And the question he asked was, where are the Afghan truck drivers? And he was told by the US JSOC or whatever it was, oh no Afghans here. They were strip mining Afghanistan's natural resources and selling it directly to the Chinese.
See that? The doggone military industrial complex up there is so much in bed with the international bankers and corporations that, you know, what you see going on out there, 99.9% of it, I would estimate, is pure propaganda. Just to go out there and rape somebody else's resources. You know, that disgusts me. But it's not just America, it's other nations out there. And that's probably why Russia's getting so doggone mad, because they got resources they're trying to sell too, and they're being bounced around over there. You know?
Well, don't forget that Russia has kind of significant deals with Syria and Iran for oil. For importation, not exportation. They need those resources.
Yep.
And of course, who's running around the place and been caught red-handed funding people who are fundamentally, if you want to go back far enough, they're kind of started off with the Mujahideen from Afghanistan. These were the people that fought against the Russians in a proxy war for US interests.
And so...
It's hilarious. It's a complete and utter joke.
And so what is this whole purpose of the whole United Nations if the United Nations, it's just a name, man. It ain't nothing. It's, you know, you talk about bringing the world under one world government. I don't want that at all, because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I don't want no part of it. But at the same sense...
You have to remember, after World War One, they developed the League of Nations, but nobody took them seriously. So after World War Two, they developed the United Nations. Now, in amongst themselves, the United Nations have failed to stop 65 conflicts, if not more, since their inception.
As far as I'm concerned, they probably helped to incite riots as opposed to, you know, quell them or whatever.
But they're quite happy to go to a farm in the middle of Nowheresville in the U.S., and evict people from their property because they've built a gas digestion system.
Yeah.
And then Uncle Sheriff turns up and says, we're evicting you from your property because the UN disagrees with you.
Huh.
I mean, what are you talking about?
You know, it's the little guy that's getting screwed no matter how it turns out, whether it be the climate change debacle with the carbon tax. Everybody's always got to reduce their footprint who isn't part of the government. You know? Who's going to reduce the size of the footprint of the federal government off the top of the people's back? That's what I want to know.
what it comes down to is what I said earlier about Field of Nightmares. Build it and they will come. And they'll come with big guns.
And they'll tear
and
it
that's
down.
Why they want to take yours.
That's what I'm telling you guys, gals out there, you know, the only way to beat the system is beat it at its own game, you know. Learn the laws inside and out and use their own corporate laws against them, and then turn around and basically start depleting them of money in their pockets by getting your doggone house off the power grid one light bulb at a time. If it's just a doggone fan and a light bulb, that's less money going in the pocket of that power structure. And you don't ask for permission. You don't call up and say, "Hey, Mr. Power Company, do you mind if I put a solar panel up because I can't afford your bill?" Don't worry about all that. Just throw the doggone thing up at your house. If they're hollering about it being outside, set it inside the window. Put your doggone sunroof in and let the sun come through the roof, for Pete's sake.
Let the sunshine in.
Oh. Yeah. Well, there's a will, there's a way. It starts with you. That's all I can say. Hey, that's almost
actually,
like a poem, man.
It's, where there's a will, there's usually inheritance tax.
Yeah. That sure be another red flag if the government wants part of your grandpa's finances whenever he passes away. You know, heck, when you're dead, they still want to dig you up and see if you got any money in your pocket or a gold tooth. And you can't even trust the guy at the funeral home, because the guy at the funeral home, there's been many of them get caught stealing stuff off the dead. Sickos. Think you did you that got that gold ring that you put on your paw's hand is gonna stay there whenever everybody leaves and the funeral guy's there by himself? Heck no, man. You probably got a whole pocket full of gold rings. You can't trust anybody, man. This whole dang world's corrupt. Hey, and I seen something even creepier than that. They go to bury somebody, you rent a casket, really nice looking. Looks like you spent thousands of dollars on this deal, right? And there's a pine box that goes inside this thing. So they carry this real beautiful casket out, put everybody in, you know, in the grave, and then whenever everybody leaves, they pull these levers, drops the box down inside the hole, and they take the beautiful casket off for recycling. That's creepy, man. You can't even not get mugged whenever you're dead.
Well, I find it kind of creepy that people want to take all the resources that a person managed to cram into their body out of the earth and stick it in a box and never allow it to recycle back into the earth.
Well, I don't even know where all that started to begin with. You know? Like the pharaohs back
belief
in the year.
Belief of a soul, man.
Yeah.
The second they believed in a soul, they believed that they had to do something with the body to protect it so that the soul could use it again later. That's why the pharaohs were basically sticking all their organs in jars and crap like that.
Well, in fairness, Tom, I would like to point out that in the Scandinavian region, they've come up with a way of recycling corpses.
That's disgusting.
But all of those elements that the human body has been extracting from the earth during its lifetime, they've now found a way of dehydrating and desiccating the body, so all of those elements can be returned to the earth.
That's freaking nasty, man.
Why would they have to go through a whole process to figure that out when nature already had a process for it? You die and fall in a ditch. Flowers grow out of you.
Agenda 21, my friend.
Either way, man, it's all creepy, man. This world is messed up.
So Agenda 21 also includes making things more complicated than they have to be?
I thought that was the whole point of it.
I'm telling you, yeah. On one sense, I hope the alien people are right. I hope that there are UFOs. I hope one lands in my yard, because whenever they get out to go use the loo, I'm going to run over and jump in their ship and take off, man. I'm going to get off this crazy rock.
You're going to pull what they did in A Matter Darkly, where they, whenever the Vulcan showed up, they charged them with guns and took their ship from them?
Yeah. See, no, I'm going to be nice about it. I'm going to sneak on it, but I'm going to leave my car keys behind. You know, it's up to them to figure out how to drive it.
Give your car?
Yeah.
Hey, Shaziz.
Yeah.
I stole your Millennium Falcon. Here's a an old beater.
How do you know that Millennium Falcon is the Electron.
You know, yeah, there you go. Hey, and then whenever they get pulled over and they ain't got no driver's license, and the cop pepper sprays them and beats them up, and it'd be like they wish they never came to this planet. What a world.
Which is this.
Yeah.
If I ever catch any aliens using my loo, I'm going to be riding down the U-Bender doing a bit of probing with my own. I call that a sweet revenge.
Dude, that's the whole point, is that that whole probing thing is a human thing, man. You got a bunch of sickos that are into that sort of thing, so they got to imagine everybody else is doing it and into it.
Well, I don't know, man. All I can say, the Earth is flat, and the Earth is round, the Earth is concave. The Earth is, what was that really high-tech one earlier that you said, Steve?
About what?
This shape of the Earth.
Dodecahedron.
Dodecahedron, yeah. The Earth is dodecahedron.
Isohedron.
Yeah, there you go.
Isodecahedron.
And
you can say lumpy.
Yeah.
and there's the reason why everybody is suffering from hypogonic lactophobia.
Yeah, whatever the heck that is.
Actually, it technically means the fear of freezing to death in a cave full of backwana.
Oh, that'd be disgusting. Anyway, you know, there has been a plethora of hydrogen and oxygen molecules emanating from the sky in a form of precipitation, otherwise known as rain, down here in the great state of Misery. So, with that said, there's a lot of flooding going on, and it's like a muddy swamp outside. That's part of the whole global warming slash
muddy?
Climate change. I don't know, Muddy's AWOL. He wasn't here today.
Muddy ditched us.
Yep. Well, guys, we're down to it, man. That's about it for the Mad Science Show today. So, with that said, it's been a brilliant show. And then we didn't even take a music break. That's odd.
Well, you already wasted 14 minutes in the beginning of it for your intro.
Oh, yeah, I guess that was the music break. We already got that out of the way. That way everybody could have some tunage, too, so...
I just want to know how much time do you actually get to the show with the intro and the outros?
Well, with this one, probably more time than on the nights. I don't know. Probably balances itself out. But either way, you got to have that intro time to make sure that everything is transmitting right. Otherwise, you know, if you jump right on there and find out you got a problem, you can't necessarily run away from the mic real quick. Oh, hold on while I go turn this knob. Hey, you know how...
I'm going to turn this down from 11.
You know how the Star Trek spaceship, the Enterprise, it's all decked out and beautiful and all kinds of, you know, everything's like clean and orderly and stuff like that. And then you jump from that episode to over, like, say, Firefly, and that ship is kind of raggedy and it's put together with baling wire and duct tape. Well, the Shazia's ship is worse. It's put together with scotch tape and baling wire.
And bubblegum.
And bubblegum.
In finishes this, I would like to point out that I watched every one of the Star Trek movies, all 10 of them recently.
Yeah?
And in half of those movies, these sparkling, shiny new ships, usually just released from dock, end up in smithereens within the first quarter of the film.
Well,
I mean, even when they went back in time, they needed to use a Klingon vessel because the Enterprise had been blown up.
Well, my spaceship's my spaceship's made out of old hot water tanks and washing machines and you know, electrical devices. Yeah. I asked my wife that question. If I build a spaceship, do you want to get in and go for a ride? She says, heck no.
Because you'll hear the...
Pow!
I'm surprised Steve isn't getting the reference for the tune there.
I am. I'm just staying silent because I'm enough of a nerd as it is at the minute.
Yeah, he don't want to add to his nerddom.
My reputation is secured.
All right, cool.
I have nothing left to prove.
Well, anyway.
My friends don't always call me Ace, but when they do, it's usually followed by Hole.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Folks, you've been listening to Shaziz Radio and Shaziz Mad Science on there. Jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. You can catch me up on Facebook or YouTube or whatever. The answers to all the questions that you need are right out there in front of your face. All the materials that you need to build the perfect generating systems have been there all along. You just need to take and build yourselves the networks like Thomas was talking about, and finding the resources
Yeah. Well, as I say, we should maybe do a little poll and see if people would actually appreciate a video feed from the show that I'm talking about doing from the lab.
Oh, yeah, that would be a brilliant. That would be a brilliant one. And we actually have that capability on Shaziz Radio. Steve knows how to work that website, so maybe he can throw one together for us. All right.
I think you're talking about the poll for Steve to set up, or are you talking about the video?
the poll. I can do the video, or okay. We can do it in conjunction with one another. But, yeah.
I can do a poll.
So,
I'd like to maybe broadcast it out in a way where it can basically be replicated on several different platforms. That way they don't have to be pushed into one thing or another, kind of the way we've had before. When we talked about doing something, one person came in and took over the whole idea and started demanding everybody get onto one particular platform because they were a fan of it.
Tom, if we do it through Uhu, you can stream it directly to YouTube.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at open broadcast software, and it allows you to basically broadcast to just about anything. It's also the cleanest system for broadcasting video and audio off your computer.
Well, let's get it worked out and get it done, because I don't mind turning the cameras on in my lab and letting people see real time what's going on in there. And zero fossil fuel over there. If you guys haven't checked out his YouTube channel, go over and check out his work, because he's got the equivalence of virtual lab going on right now on his website over there. I posted links in the chat room. It's also in the chat room up underneath both the Wake Radio site and the YouTube channels underneath the Shaziz Radio site. Got a big Z on there. It says zero fossil fuel. So go check him out. Subscribe to his channel if you like his work. And there are other brilliant ones out there. Link to my YouTube channel that you can check out. Muddy Muddy Mudman's YouTube channel. And you know, there's plenty of information out there. Let's just get together and put these pieces of the puzzle and finish the big picture and give everybody what they've been saying they want. Alternative, clean, alternative, renewable, free energy. It's there. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science Show. Take care.
What's going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.